Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on Sunday, July 24th, 2016. This is episode 1308. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now. Enter the promo code TECHGUY for 30% off your entire order. And by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your house. Go to ring.com/techguy and get $50 off one of their Ring of Security kits, the bundle kit or the pro bundle kit, with their limited time offer. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere, U.S., Canada, outside that area. Please, you can call me via Skype. Any voice over the internet product won't cost you a penny. 888-827-5536. That's toll free, and I'd love to hear from you. So it's official. We mentioned it last show because it seemed like it was almost official. Now it is. Yahoo has been sold. Yahoo has been sold to Verizon. Verizon, I get the feeling Verizon's kind of like one of those collectors that's collecting vintage, you know, computers, antiques, because they bought AOL. And now they got Yahoo. You know, I understand Alta Vista's going real cheap. You could get them for a song. While you're at it, why don't you buy Polaroid and Westinghouse? You could just have a whole, you could have a complete set. Yahoo went for $4.8 billion, which must, in his heart, Steve Ballmer, the former CEO of Microsoft, must just be, I don't know if he's laughing, crying, or just breathing a sigh of relief. You might remember Microsoft tried to buy AOL. Steve Ballmer, the CEO, tried to buy AOL a few years ago for, I think it was $41 billion. I'll just say it without laughing. $41 billion. And the deal fell through. And talk about dodging a bullet. It's not that Microsoft can't afford it, but wow. Wow. So there you go. Another legend, kind of legendary name in internet history, Yahoo, which many don't know stands for. I think it's a retronym. That is, you have a name and then you go backwards and say, well, what could that stand for? It must be a retronym, because the folks at Yahoo say it stands for yet another hierarchically officious oracle. No, like just Yahoo. Do you think Verizon AOL will keep? Sorry, it's just Verizon. Will keep the Yahoo Yodel? I used to like the Yodel, the purple. They used to have a big purple sign in San Francisco, just off the freeway. It looked like a Vegas sign with lights and stuff. It was really cool. People kind of were sad when they took it down some years ago. In fact, they put it back up last year. But I got sick of the Yodel because at Levi Stadium, which is home of the San Francisco 49ers now, it's in Silicon Valley. It's up the road a piece from Yahoo. Our seats are in the, the Yahoo fan zone or something. That's what they call it, I think. I wonder if they'll do that this season. Anyway, last season, you had to go up an escalator to get them, and they had speakers blaring the Yahoo Yodel. They would play constantly. They would play, moment from the 49ers' glorious past, not their glorious present, but their glorious past. And then after each time after they did it, they would play the Yahoo yodel. And by the time you'd get up to the top of the escalator, you wouldn't want to hear that ever again. It's like, okay, got it. You bought the rights. You got the naming rights. Got to go for it. But so now I'm wondering, what are they going to do now? What are they going to do now? Yahoo! let's see. What can we talk about? That's not probably... There's not much more to be said about that. I don't know. You know, Verizon's really looking at... Most importantly, they're looking at the customers and the sales engine, the advertising engine, that kind of thing. That's where they're going to... That's where they're going to get most of their juju. I don't know if they're going to get $4.8 billion worth. That seems like an awful lot. But there you have it. There you have it. The deal is done. Let's see what else happened this past week. Next week we're going to get Apple's earnings. This is going to be interesting. This is going to be something we're going to want to watch. It will be kind of telling, and I'll tell you why. Apple has kind of hit peak iPhone. That's what some are calling it. iPhone growth has slowed and might even at this point, given that, you know, it's the quarter before a new iPhone or a couple of quarters before a new iPhone, might even get to the point where they go backwards. I think that may actually happen this time, where the sales are down. That would be a first. Not growth has slowed, but sales are down. And iPad sales have been down a lot. And I think this, you know, this is going to be one investors are going to say, is this going to be, I think investors are waiting. And, you know, they're kind of like sharks. They're waiting for something bad to happen. So they... You know, and I guess if you put, you know, you invested something, you're always trying to figure out, when do I get out? So it'll be interesting to see. I think Apple's results come out Tuesday for their quarter just ending in June. Maybe poor timing for this. For the first time, iOS and Macintosh have had a serious vulnerability, exploit. Now, a lot of times I think people who run Macs, and certainly iPhones, feel like we're safe. We don't have to worry. The bad guys are going to go after Windows. They're going to go after Android. We don't have to worry. Maybe this is a little call to a wake-up call here. It was actually a very similar vulnerability to Android's, what they called stage fright vulnerability. It was possible. Now it's fixed, by the way, because the company that discovered this did the right thing. They told Apple before they publicized it, that Cisco was the company that found it. They unveiled a vulnerability that was very similar to one last year that was called the worst Android vulnerability ever. And I'm sure a few iPhone and Macintosh users going, don't be too quick to laugh at these things because what goes around comes around. Similar thing, a malcrafted iMessage could be sent, would work either, as I said, on the desktop or on your portable, that would allow a bad guy to take over your phone, to get hold of your password and files, just by sending you a message. Just by sending you a text message. Now, as far as we know, it's good that Cisco found this. No one has used it. It wasn't out there in the wild. Cisco told Apple. Apple has released a patch. But what it underscores, and I think the good news is Apple users pretty much always do this, is you've got to apply those fixes. So, and by the way, this isn't just Macintosh and iOS, iPhone. It's iPad, it's Apple Watch, Watch OS, it's Apple TV, TV OS. So those have all been patched. El Capitan, iOS 933, Watch OS 222, TV OS 922. If you are running OS X Mavericks or Yosemite, the earlier version, El Capitan is the current version of OS X. If you're running last year's version, there isn't a fix yet. I'm sure there will be soon. I guess the answer probably is to disable iMessage the Messages app on those desktop computers if you're still running Mavericks or Yosemite until the fix comes out, or upgrade. And one good thing Apple does is these updates are all free. You can upgrade to the latest version of OS X for free. Are there, may be Macs that can't get past Mavericks. You know, they're too old. If that's the case, turn off Messages. Turn off Messages. And, you know, I want to pat on the back to Cisco because they told Apple first and they let Apple fix it before they told the world. And I'm glad they did both. They should tell the world. We should know, right? And it's a call to all of us. If you haven't updated your iOS, you might have noticed a recent update, or your Apple Watch or TV, do that now, or your Macintosh. And do it whenever there's an update. All right, let's take a break. Calls are next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So glad to be here with you today. I don't know what you're up to. Maybe you're doing errands around town, or I don't know, maybe you're in bed. I used to listen to them when I was a kid. In fact, from a lot of my life, my early life, and this is probably why I got into radio, I used to lie in bed late at night and listen to the radio. Did you do that? I used to listen to baseball games. I remember in 1969, I was lying in bed, and we lived in Rhode Island, and I was hearing about all the kids. I was 13. I was hearing all about all the kids going up to Woodstock, how the roads were jammed. And I was thinking, I wish I were going to Woodstock. Then I used to, you'd have to do it at night because you couldn't quite get it, but I used to tune in WOR in New York and listen to Gene Shepherd late at night. The great radio legend. Then later, when I was in college, I would actually get up, and this is for a college kid unusual. I would get up at 6 in the morning. Didn't have class, but I wanted to listen to Imus in the Morning on WNBC. WNBC, yeah. And Reverend Billy Saul Hargis and all of the characters he used to do in that. But I think that's, you know what, now that I think about it, that's probably why I got into this business.
Any radio geek does that.
They will tell you that story probably, yeah.
Yeah, I listened to the station I ultimately ended up working for, KGO.
There's a dream come true, isn't it?
Yeah. And talk radio in the middle of the night. And what sixth grader does that?
I know. It's got to be genetic.
It's a bug. It's something that I've had from the time I was a wee tot. Always loved the radio.
My mom, bless her heart, 83, has started posting pictures on Instagram. I tried to get her into Snapchat. Couldn't quite get her into Snapchat, but she got Instagram and she's been posting, and she posted a picture of me as a probably 4-year-old kid, and I'm wearing, for some reason, I don't know, I guess I liked hats at the time, a Mountie costume with a Mountie hat, and I'm sitting in front of a record player holding 45s and playing records. And she said, yeah, you were doing this even when you were a baby. Yeah. That's weird.
I had a Fisher Price record player.
Yeah, well, I think it probably was.
Not everybody has it. It's just, it's a...
You think it's genetic?
Breed. I don't think it's genetic. My parents don't have it, but...
Well, yeah, nobody in my family did
genetic.
This.
It's not genetic. It's just, it's something...
I always thought if I were born in an era before radio, I'd probably have been a preacher. That's probably the closest thing, right? Every Sunday. See, I preach every Sunday, but I preach the gospel of technology. Technology. Put your hand on the computer. All right, let's... enough about me. We've got some great phone calls, I think. What do we got here?
Oh, Tony's got a flaky internet connection, and he wants to know whether it's his router or it's modem.
Oh, lordy, lordy.
How can he fix it?
You know, this is the new category, the new top. It's every few years, there's a new thing that we get asked a lot. Starting, I remember in the early 90s and mid-90s, it was, how do I get on this thing called the internet? And it was pretty hard to do, but we talked a lot about that along with interrupt requests. Now it's my router. Hi, Tony. I hear it's pretty hot in San Diego.
Not bad here in San Diego.
Oh, good.
Well, anyway, congratulations on that Tesla. I saw it yesterday.
Oh, it's a beauty. It's a beauty. Oh, man, all electric car and the technology in there, mind-boggling. I'm going to be down your way in about a week. We're going down to San Diego to... You know, Steve Martin's got a new play down there.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, go see it at the Old Globe. I think it's going into previews August 2nd, I think.
Wow, maybe.
Oh, it'll be funny. It's going to be a comedy. It's going to be, you know, he's the funniest man alive, so it should be a lot of fun.
Very funny.
What can I do for you?
Well, I got a couple things, but the main thing is this modem router I have, and It never struck me until I've been hearing him on the show.
See?
It's up every periodically, and I'm thinking maybe that's my problem.
Yeah, see, this is... So, we recently, a lot of us tech guys have been talking about the fact that most of us are using kind of commodity, cheap routers, and they're starting to wear out. And so a lot of people are complaining about internet issues that are probably just the router. I think I think Brian Lamb over at the Wirecutter, I think it was he who wrote the article saying, all your problems are because you're using an old router. Stop being so cheap and get a new one. Now, it's worse because you're using the router that came from your cable company, right?
That's correct. It's a Netgear. And it's a, I believe I bought it in 2010.
Oh, okay. So you're not using the one that the cable company, your ISP gave you. You bought your own.
I bought my own through them.
Oh, through them, though. Okay.
Yes, I did.
And so you don't rent it. You paid it once, and now it's yours.
Correct, sir.
Yeah.
Well, here's what's going on. Every now and then, it would shut down.
Yeah.
I would go offline. So I would have to go in the back. Shut the button on and off, keep it off about maybe 30 seconds to a minute, go back, put it back on, and boom, I'm back online again.
Yep, that's a symptom.
And then if I'm doing a video or whatever, or reading a topic, my page would freeze up.
Yeah, that's the symptom. So, you know, it's hard to know when you know, an internet connection is, of course, a bunch of things. It could start from the website you're visiting. That could be bad. Down to your internet service provider's connection to the outside world, your connection to the internet service provider, the internet service provider themselves, the machine you use to connect to the internet service provider, in other words, the cable modem. It could be the router on or off the cable modem that's distributing the internet. It could be your computer. It could be the software in your computer. And the wires in between. It could be any of that stuff. But...
Okay.
So... You're looking for a pattern, and I think you've got the pattern that indicates it's the router. Resetting the router, turning it off and on fixes it.
Yep.
It freezes periodically, and then you turn it off and on, and then it fixes it again. So
yeah,
maybe
the guy with the scarf, that computer with the scarf on, that's cold.
I can't move. I'm so cold. It's frozen.
But,
so
I'm on Cox, and I know that they got a few. Modem routers to choose from. Now,
yeah. So what you don't want to do is buy it from
router end. So I got an Aeris Super surfboard, and then I also have the Netgear.
I use the Aeris. My friends at the Wirecutter who review all of this stuff, and then their thing is pick the best one. You don't want to see like this is good, this is good, this is okay, this
is. I don't mind spending the money.
Yeah, they like the Aeris surfboard. There's a lower end one and a higher end one. I bought the higher end one. If you go to thewirecutter.com, you can read their review.
Okay.
I bought the higher end. I'll give you the number too. But
yes, sir.
If you'd like to know more, and that's the modem though. That's not the router.
Okay, but I want both.
And that's I think the case. I think you know it may not be the modem. It may be the router. Although these modems aren't expensive, so it's not a big deal to buy a new modem. And a new router. The router is where you're going to spend money. And I think that one thing people do is they buy routers that are too cheap.
Okay.
So you don't want to go with the $40 Blue Linksys box. You know, those aren't. And Netgear makes good ones, but they also make cheap ones. So let me start with the surfboard, the Aeris. Motorola bought this company.
Okay.
The one that they say they like, the less expensive one that they say they like, is the surfboard SB6141. That's $70 on Amazon. The six.
Okay, yes, they have it on here. That's one of theirs. Now, is that a combination of both router
and... No, and you don't want to combine them, in my opinion. That's a convenience, but I wouldn't combine them. They say if you want to go faster, if your cable company, if your internet company is capable of faster, you can get one step up. Which is a 61A3. I'll talk about the routers when we come back, because that's another matter entirely. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Maybe Aeris bought Motorola, I don't know. One or the other. And they also recommend, the Wirecutter recommends, the router that I like. But I have a couple of recommendations along those. That gets more complicated if you're doing Wi-Fi. They like a very inexpensive one, the Archer, which is really cheap. This is from TP-Link, the Archer C7. That's $100. Not that cheap, actually. So I haven't tried this, but they do like this. But I'll tell you, I'm kind of a fan of the Asus. Yeah, see, and I'm not sure I completely agree with their router recommendations. This is the router I've been using that I really like. I'm doing this wrong. Yeah, there, let's do it that way. This is the Asus. Also looks pretty cool. The AC3200. Now, there's a reason why this has six antennas on it. And it's not just for the cool factor, although it is pretty darn cool. But it has three bands. It has one 2.4 gigahertz band and two 5 gigahertz bands. Very often, if you're doing Wi-Fi, going to 5 is a good idea because 5 gigahertz is less cluttered. That's not going to stay that way forever. And that's one of the reasons you don't want to buy the router and modem in one thing. You're going to keep the cable modem for a long time. The router, you're probably going to upgrade every few years. You know, I would really think that that's one of the problems is that people buy that router and they use it for 5 or 6 years. And not only does it wear out, it doesn't have the latest technology. So if you're doing a Wi-Fi router, this is very good, the Asus AC3200. Now, if money is not an object, because this is a really expensive solution, but I've been very happy with the Eero, E-E-R-O. And this is kind of a wild card thing. This is designed for people who have houses or apartments that are so big that one router doesn't give you great access throughout. If you've got dead zones, you probably wouldn't buy this if you just, you know, didn't have that problem. But we had that problem. I mean, really, the router was in the middle of the house, but the two ends of the house just really weren't getting good connections. And I put in this Eero. Now, it's $600. You get three units, one base station and two satellites, although they all look the same. In fact, they are all the same. It's controlled by your Android or iPhone. And they do some very interesting, I think very smart things, but mostly it works differently than a Wi-Fi router and extender. It uses mesh technology. And I found this thing transformed my house. I can now go up the driveway 100 feet and still be on Wi-Fi. And I know that because normally when I drive away, you know, the car switches, you know, the phone switches eventually from Wi-Fi to phone, and I could see the difference. It does. I have practically the next block before it switches over to LTE. So, but this is ridiculously expensive. I mean, it's way overpriced. So I would only recommend it if you have one of those systems where there's houses where just Wi-Fi has got just hard to get it working. But this is kind of a weird technology. I wish it weren't so expensive. That's the real knock on this thing. It's also for geeks. It doesn't have all the 18 pages of configuration at all. Plume is coming out with something, and Luma is coming out with something, but I haven't been able to try those yet. We're talking with Tony in San Diego. He's having trouble with his online connection, freezing, dropping, rebooting the router, fixes it. He wants to fix it permanently by getting a new router. I'm recommending a new cable modem. If the Aeris is one that is approved by your cable provider, that's an excellent one. The Surfboard. They used to be called Motorola Surfboards. Now they're the Aeris Surfboards. And then the next thing is to get a better router. Are you Wi-Fi, Tony, or wired? Was he gone? I think he's gone. All right. If you're wired, it doesn't really matter. But most of us want to use Wi-Fi, right? I mean, that's what you really want. So you can use multiple devices anywhere in the house. You could use a phone, tablet, computer, desktop, or laptop. And it just works wherever you are. So the Wi-Fi router I use and I really like is from Asus, A-S-U-S. Not cheap. But I think a good router is not going to be cheap. And one of the reasons you want to separate it out from the cable modem or the DSL modem is you're not going to upgrade the DSL or cable modem. In all likelihood, that's going to last for years. But you are going to, every few years, get a new router. Specs change, technologies change, and they tend to wear out. They're little computers, and they're hot little computers. And if you do a lot of traffic through them, they literally seem to wear out, stop working well. And this is the symptom. They drop a lot. So the Asus, and they make a number of them, but I particularly like this AC3200. It looks like a spider. It's got six antennas. But there's reasons I like it. One is it's completely configurable, even to the point where you can put open source software on it, firmware on it. And that's one of the problems with routers these days is router companies, especially the cheap routers, the commodity routers like Linksys, they make it and they forget about it. They don't update it. There have been many security flaws in routers, and they're rarely fixed, almost never fixed. And that means you're sitting there, you know, with a nice secure system, you're careful, you do your updates, and your router is a you know, sitting out there on the internet going, come on, take me over. So we don't want to do that. So this is one reason that you want to spend a little bit more on a router. It's nice to have a router that you can, that either the company is going to update the firmware regularly to fix flaws, or that you can put your own firmware on there. And Asus is very proud that you can put Tomato or DDWRT, these are these third-party router firmware on there. They're kept more up to date more frequently. So if you're a geek and you're not uncomfortable with flashing the firmware of your router, these are great routers. If you're a geek, you'll like it that it has like 18 pages of configuration. Anything you'd want to do, you can do, including QoS, quality of service. It has three bands, as I mentioned, 2.4 gigahertz and then two 5 gigahertz bands. And the reason that's a good thing is a lot of the problems we're having with Wi-Fi these days come from the fact that it's congested. The spectrum, the air, the band is congested because your neighbor has Wi-Fi. You have more than one device at that 2.4 gigahertz. I have a Sonos system that was clobbering the 2.4 gigahertz band. 5 gigahertz tends to be less congested, and having two 5 gigahertz bands means you can move to the least congested band and get the best Wi-Fi performance. So having the choice is really nice. $200 router. That's the AC3200 from Asus. There is a next step up, and this is a new category that's just started coming out. These are Wi-Fi routers. They tend to be very expensive, that use something called a mesh technology. So in the past, if you couldn't get the Wi-Fi to every corner of the house, you'd buy an extender, it's like a little repeater, a transmitter, receiver, repeater, that you'd put halfway and it would extend it, but it never worked very well. And we spent a lot of time getting people's, you know, systems working, and it's touchy. And I was having this problem. And a company called Eero sent me something they do, E-E-R-O. It's really expensive. This is the answer only if you've tried everything and nothing works. I almost don't even like saying $600. You get three devices. They're all the same. One will be the base station. Actually, all three could be if you have Ethernet in other places. But generally, in my house, one's a base station connected to the router, or the cable modem, I should say. This is a router Wi-Fi adapter. And then you put two base units. And the Eero uses your smartphone to help you position those. So it has software for iOS and Android. And you'll position those using the software on the phone and set up what they call a mesh network. It's not a repeater. It's think of it as a net or a mesh over the whole house. And I have to say, the first ones they sent me didn't work, and I was unimpressed. They said, give us another chance. You probably got a bad unit. They sent me a second one, and it worked so well, I haven't sent it back yet. I think I'm going to have to buy it from them because it's phenomenal, much better than anything I've used, including the AirPort Extreme from Apple, which is another very high-quality, high-priced router, and the Asus 3200 I just mentioned. It's phenomenal. I can go down the driveway. I can go in the backyard. I can go all around the house, not just in the house, and still get excellent Wi-Fi. It's not as geekily configurable. You have to do it all on the phone. You have to set up an account with them. The good news on this is they're keeping the software up to date. I've noticed multiple updates over the time I've owned it. They're continually updating it. They say they even update it as they see what kinds of devices you're using. Now, that's something to be aware of. They back at the home office of Eero, apparently are monitoring how I'm using my network. And they say, you're using a Roku. Well, we're going to tweak it a little bit to make it work better for the Roku, that kind of thing. If I trust them, but that's something to be aware of. You have to either use a phone number or a real email address. You don't have a password to log into the router. You log into your account, and the router's attached to your account. They keep it up to date. They do have some nice guest features. For instance, somebody comes in your house, you can send them a text that gives them a temporary password, lets them use a guest portion of your network without compromising your full network. That's nice. It's less geeky. It's less, you kind of let them do all the work. But if you don't want to be messing around with all the settings and you're willing to spend $600, I think for some people, yeah, you know, the problem is we've been conditioned to pay $40 for a Linksys. That should be cheap. And maybe it's time to think that how important is good Wi-Fi everywhere in the house? It's not just for your laptop. It's not just for your phone. You know, my Roku, my Apple TV, my Chromecast, my Sonos all use Wi-Fi. And so having good Wi-Fi suddenly becomes a very important thing in your house. And if you think of it that way, you know, it's like buying a refrigerator, buying a stove. It's a big appliance in your house. And I wish it were half as much. Then I could recommend it wholeheartedly. It's a little expensive, but something to be aware of. EERO.com. There are some companies coming along that say they're going to do the same thing. They haven't come out yet, or the ones that have come out. I've ordered a Luma. Similar idea. Amazon's a big investor in this. Luma. They say it's the same thing. It's $100 less. Same. Looks the same. There's a company called Plume. The Lumas, I don't know if it's shipping or not. I haven't gotten mine yet. I'll give you a review when I do. There's a company called Plume, P-L-U-M-E. Little different, much less expensive. Same idea. I'll be trying that too. It's hard to recommend them until you try them, right? And then there is a business class, kind of an enterprise solution that if you're more sophisticated, you should look at, called Ubiquiti. And these are less expensive but require significantly more expertise to set up, but a lot of businesses. You should ask your IT guy because she'll know. She'll say, oh, yeah, Ubiquiti. That's what we're using probably in many cases. So Ubiquiti, Eero, Plume, and Luma. These are all kind of newer ways to do the same old thing and do it. They do it much, much better. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. We shall talk more in just a moment. Don't forget, in about 45 minutes, Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, stops by for a camera, a digital photography lesson. 888-827-5536. Website, and I'll have links to all of this there, techguidelabs.com. Hey, our show today brought to you by The Tracker. Oh, do I love The Tracker. I'm a key loser. Misplacer. I like to think of it as misplaced, temporarily misplaced. The keys, the remote, the dog. So I was really glad to find The Tracker. I want to say Kickstarter some time ago, and I remember very well and kicked in on it and said, this is cool. And they've gotten better and better, and now they've got The Tracker Bravo, which I just love. Here's one right here. I keep these. It's thin, it's light, it's anodized aluminum. I keep it on my keychain. And here's the beauty part. This is a two-way tracker. So I pair it to my Android phone or your iOS phone. You attach it to whatever by a key loop. It has an adhesive. You put it on the back of a remote. They even have a waterproof cover, so you could put your tracker on your pet. And it's small enough and light enough, you could put it on a small pet even, like Ozzy. You put it in the water-resistant sleeve. And now, when you get a separation, like Ozzy gets out of range, Bluetooth range about 100 feet, so if he gets out more than 100 feet away, I get an alert on my phone, and a map showing the last time we saw the remote control or the keys. It goes the other way, too. If I leave my phone behind, I can press the button on my tracker, the phone will ring, even if it's on silent. Now, here's the most interesting thing Tracker's doing. They've got something called a crowd GPS network. See, they've sold a lot of these trackers, 1.5 million. And every one of them phones home, even if it's not your phone. So let's say you misplace your keys. You leave them at the beach in the sand. Now, you're going to have a map of the last place your phone saw the keys. But if the keys then got picked up and moved somewhere else, you would get updates whenever any tracker device saw them. Any phone with a tracker device saw them. You would get a message saying, hey, this is where your keys are. So it's in effect like everybody's helping everybody else out. All the tracker users are helping all the other tracker users. It's the largest crowd GPS network in the world. So your phone can track up to 10 devices at once, so don't hold back. Get trackers for everything you lose. It's Bluetooth low energy, so the battery lasts about a year. Yes, it's replaceable, so you don't have to worry about that. You can put a new one of those little, you know, coin-sized batteries in there and get another year out of it. You can even add, because they're anodized aluminum, a laser-engraved message to each tracker Bravo, like return info or pet info or whatever. They also have the Tracker Atlas. Now, this works with your Tracker Bravo or third-party Bluetooth trackers to pinpoint your items, get this, inside your house on a customizable floor plan. So if you leave the remote behind a seat cushion, it'll actually help you find it behind the seat cushion. You just save time and energy by just asking the Tracker Atlas where your item is, and you'll get an answer. You don't have to start looking around. Here's the deal. We got a great deal for you. Go to thetracker.com. This will be probably the hardest thing for you to find. T-H-E-T-R-A-C-K-R. No E in there. Thetracker.com. And never lose your possessions again. And we got a great deal. If you enter the offer code TECHGUY, you'll get 30% off your entire order, no matter how big. 30% off. T-H-E-T-R-A-C-K-R.com. Promo code TECHGUY. 30% off your entire order. Tracker order. What a great deal. The Tracker. So I should talk about this. Joby just sent me something. It's so funny. Joby's so funny. This says, let's see if I can find a picture of it. From Zach at Joby for hunting Pokemon. This is the Joby Powerband Micro. Doubles, it's 3,500 milliamp hours, so it's a small external battery, and I gather that you're supposed to do this and this. So it's a little, it's a strap-on battery pack. But you know, everybody who's doing Pokemon Go needs an external battery now, because the thing just clobbers your battery. That's kind of a cool idea. Have any of you in the chat room used the Luma or the Plume yet? Have you? I ordered the Luma. It still hasn't come. And the Plume is not till later this year. All right, so I should charge this so I can see how it works. Baby, go hunting Pokemon. There we go. Oh, it's all charged up almost. All right. Yeah, oh, Type-C, I forgot. That's probably part of the issue, because it has a built-in... Yeah, no. You need a Type-C adapter. It has a built-in micro USB. Oh, that's a bummer. Is that the only... Maybe this one's Type-C. No. Yeah, it's all micro USB. Pour Android. But I have a... adapter that might do the trick. Let's see. Let's see it by purse. By burse. I should keep listening. You think I have enough keys now? I'm like a jailer. I should be working at San Quentin. Crazy. Yes, this will do. Let's see if this works. Excuse me. So this is a micro USB to Type-C adapter. Yeah. So then put that in here. It's kind of a long thing, though. And you could still strap it on, though. It's just you'd have this kind of extender. Yeah. If we have Sonic Fiber Service, which we do, or we will,
whose ONT that adapts fiber to Ethernet Sonic's modem router, residential gateway. What do you recommend if you want to replace the Sonic Pacer? I would... I think Sonic is a different matter. First of all, if you wanted, you could use your own router by disabling or their modem feature or turn off DHCP in the in their router. You still need to use their modem, and you'd probably have to. But then disable, if you want your own router, disable the routing features, turn off DHCP in their modem router, and attach your own. And that would be the best way to do it.
Did you see Dane Jasper's shirt that he posted on Twitter yesterday?
No.
It was literally Dane's Twitter account. Look at the shirt he was wearing yesterday.
What's his Twitter account? Is it Dane Jasper?
No, at Dane.
At Dane. Okay.
Dane?
Yeah, I will. Dane Jasper is our new internet service provider. So happy about this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Thanks to the folks at Joby. They make those great little gorilla pods, those little tripods, and they... Zach over at Joby sent me something. He says, for your Pokemon hunting. Everybody, if you go out and see people playing Pokemon Go, it kills your battery. I mean, it kills it fast. So everybody's carrying around little battery packs. And so this is the Joby Power Band Micro. It has a little rubber thing that straps onto your phone. And then it carries, it's like doubling the battery of your phone. It's 3,500 milliamp hours. So it's a little battery, but that's probably what you don't want to carry a big old battery around. But because it's kind of strapped onto your phone, it's a little more compact. I see a lot of people playing Pokemon Go holding their phone and a battery, which is not ideal. Not ideal. 8888 Ask Leo. Back to the phones we go. And thank you, Zach, for that Joby Power Band Micro. Ian in San Francisco. Hi, Ian. Leo Laporte.
Hi, Leo. First-time caller.
Do you see a lot of people in the city wandering around playing Pokemon Go with a glazed look in their eye?
No, I haven't.
You're lucky. Apparently, in some parks in San Francisco, you can barely move. They're everywhere. What can I do for you?
I'm trying to back up my iTunes folder, and... I bought a flash drive,
good.
A USB flash drive, yep. And it really didn't work. It's too small.
Yeah. So the first thing to do is open iTunes and see how big your library is. If you click on music, you'll see at the bottom, it'll say something like 22.7 gigabytes, 7 days of listening or something like that. You can get a rough idea of how big it is. Another way to do it without the help of iTunes is, are you on a Mac or a PC?
Mac.
Look in the music folder. There's an iTunes folder. And you don't need everything in the iTunes folder. You just need the folder within that that says iTunes Media. That's what you're backing up. So if you want to know how big that is before you buy another USB drive, right-click on the iTunes Media folder and get info. And that will tell you, after a little cogitation, how much space you need. Mine's 73.72 gigabytes. So I would need a pretty big USB key. In fact, for many people who have big music libraries, it won't be a USB key. It'll be a USB external drive. And they make those in 1, 2, 3, even 4 terabyte size. I would imagine for most people that would be enough. And then you just literally drag that folder over.
Okay.
You know, you go down to a big box store or Fry's or, you know, just any store that sells hard drives. Pick out a big drive. Get a bigger drive than you need because you can use it for backup of other stuff, too. Plug it in. Once you see the drive on your desktop, once it pops up, then open up the music iTunes folder. You know, it's iTunes folder within your music folder. On PCs, it's similar. It's the My Music folder. And then take the folder that says iTunes Media. That's all your music. That's everything. That's podcasts. Anything that you listen to in iTunes, audiobooks, they'll all be in there. Just drag that folder over to the hard drive, and you've made a backup.
Do I need to format that drive?
Most of the time, no. If when you stick in the drive, it's your Mac says, well, I don't know this. What do you want me to do with this drive? Initialize it, eject it, or ignore it. Choose initialize and it'll format it. But almost all the drives, I've never seen a drive sold in the big box stores, you know, as USB drives that don't work on Macintosh. Usually they're formatted in a format, we call it FAT, the FAT format, which works on Windows and Mac. So you just plug it in. Now, you can buy a USB key that's big. I mean, they make them. I have a 256 gigabyte one. They make 128 gigabyte ones. So you could do it that way if you're looking for compactness. But a USB hard drive will be larger, cheaper, and smaller. Usually nowadays, a 4 terabyte drive is about $120. Half that size, $80. So they're not expensive. And that way you can not only, and I would recommend this, not only back up my music, back up my documents, back up my photos, back up everything. It's nice to have that. Here's another suggestion. When you back it up, if you want, what you want to do is get it off-site, right? You want to have a backup that's sitting, ideally, in a backup strategy. You have, what does backup mean? It means to have more than one copy of your data. Sometimes, this always makes me laugh. People buy a drive, they write backup on the drive, they name it backup, copy everything to it, then delete the originals. Now it's not a backup. Now it's just the original. A backup implies that there's an original somewhere else. You really, ideally, you want three copies. This is what I call 3-2-1 backup. I can't claim credit for it. My friend Peter Krogh, who's a photographer, I think he coined the term. He's an expert on what he calls digital asset management. He wrote a book, in fact, called The Damn Book, and has a website for photographers, but everybody can take a look at it. He did it in association with the Professional Photographers Society and the Library of Congress, in which he talks about, and we'll put a link in the show notes at techguylabs.com, in which he talks about backup strategy. And he calls it his 3-2-1 backup. This, if you learn one thing on this show, this is the one. Because you all have data, right? You don't want to lose. Three copies. By the way, if you delete the original, that makes it two copies. You want three copies of everything. And that is because sometimes the backup fails. So it's easy to imagine a scenario where, oh, my hard drive died, and I go to the backup, and then it's not all there. If you have three, you're much more likely to have everything you need. He also suggests the two is two different kinds of media. And the reason is don't rely on one technology. Maybe it's hard drive and DVD or USB and cloud backup. You want to mix them up. And this is really, in my mind, the most important. The one is one of them should be off-site. That means it's not. It's great to have three backups, one inside your computer, one next to your computer, and then one somewhere else. That's what I would do. And by doing that, you're preparing yourself for the worst-case scenarios, a fire and everything gets destroyed, and you still got a copy. My friend Steve Gibson, I don't know if he still did this, for years, he would back up stuff locally and then make another backup on DVD and mail it to his mom. And he'd say, "Mom, you don't even know what this is. Don't worry about it. Just put it somewhere safe." That's one way. You might buy two. One way to do this would be go to the big box store, buy two external hard drives, back up to both of them, you know, one after the other, and then take one to work. I do that with my photos. I think that's a great solution too. And then the third solution would be to have some sort of cloud storage. Another way to do this, some sort of cloud storage that you upload to. In some ways, that's the easiest. You don't have to send stuff to your mom or bring something to work. And by the way, if you bring it to work, you need to have some sort of rotation strategy. Like every week, you know, every Friday, you take the one from work home, back up to it, take the one at home back to work on Monday, that kind of thing. Because otherwise, it gets out of date. So there you go. Yeah, good backup is vital. And your music is something you've probably put a lot of time and money into, your music library. We all use digital music now. And you really do have to back that up. Even Apple says, back it up. We won't give it back. If you lose it, you've lost it. It's just like a CD. We're not going to replace it. People have to remember that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, taking a break for news at the top of the hour. More to come. You stay right here. You have to figure out what to do with my new free BSD box because Carbonite does not have Linux or BSD solutions. And I think, so that's fine. I keep using Carbonite on my Mac, but I'm going to look into maybe Amazon, maybe Glacier. Sure, there's a simple way to do it. look into that. It's going to have a lot of data because it's got 4.5 terabytes of drives in there. But it is using ZFS, which is nice. So that you have really resistance to data corruption. You have a redundancy. The data drives are 4 1-terabyte SSDs. Any one of those dies, you just put another one in, it rebuilds. It's kind of like RAID, but better. But I want a good backup solution. And actually, I need a good backup solution for the Sandstorm server, too. That's even more important. I'm sure there'll be a solution. I can look at Sandstorm. Because that's going to have – that's my cloud. This is going to be my new cloud service. I'm going to run that out of my house. Yeah, well, I don't need it to be user-friendly. I need it to be kind of like scriptable so that it will, you know, once I set it, I can, you know, have it run on a cron job or whatever and not worry about it. There used to be a great program called Jungle Disk that was an interface. You know, I think this one's too big for this. It was an interface... Yeah, or something like that. Have SCP running in the background. I'm sure there's going to be a simple way to do it. I'm going to have to look at the thing. I think what I'm going to do, so the server box, the System76 server box comes tomorrow. That's going to run Sandstorm.io. That's got a half gig boot drive and a 2 terabyte data drive. That's going to be my cloud. So Sandstorm does everything. It'll take over for Evernote, Google Drive, Google Photos, iTunes Music, all of that stuff. It'll take over for that. It's going to be in my house. It's going to be encrypted. I'm really interested in that. And then it's going to be a family server. So I can send out invites, and Lisa and Michael and everybody can log into it and use it, have their own accounts and log into it. And it has a very interesting security model. Everything's encrypted. Everything's isolated. It's really interesting. Sandstorm.io if you want to find out more about it. So I'm going to set that up. And then the FreeBSD is going to take a while. I think what I'm going to do is do kind of a play install and mess with it until I learn everything there is about. Oh, so good. Jungle Disk is still around. They got sold. And I think they went commercial, and I'm not convinced that they... Everybody now sends me all the Tesla crash reports. Thank you. Appreciate that. I don't need to know. Thank you. Oh. What? Now that's different. There you go. This is us, the small business owner with substantial federal tax exposure. Okay, I'm going to take... send that off to my accountant right now. Thank you. I don't know if we're eligible for all of that, but thank you for that article. Now, let's go back to Jungle Disk. Who bought them? I used to use them a lot. I really... I'll have to see what the FreeBSD situation is. This looks like it's less of a geek solution than it used to be. But I need a solution for Linux for that. That's going to be really important for Sandstorm. And then I need a solution for the FreeBSD box. As I said, that's running ZFS. That's going to be super cool. All right, so let's see if this works here. I think this is too big. So they... I think this is too big. It's quite a stretch to get this on. I guess it fits. Interesting solution. And then that works. Yeah. Oh, good. Oh, but I can't do the fingerprint reader now. Well, okay, not for a Nexus. Not going to work on a Nexus, but it would work on this OnePlus 3 much better, actually. Yeah, there you go. Now I can go Pokemon hunting. Wait a minute. It doesn't even block the camera if you do it just right. and not worry about. Oops. Not worry about. I should periodically do this just to get the servers. But is it charging? It doesn't say it's charging. Do I have to push a button or something? Oh, I do. Now it's charging. Yeah. Server's down. Well, that's another reason why Pokemon Go doesn't drain my battery. So it's 5 watts. Cool. Interesting.
I thought it was going to use massive amounts of data, but I've checked.
No, it's pretty good on that.
I've checked, and yeah, it hasn't killed me yet.
No. I can't remember what it was. I measured it. I think it's like 12 megabytes an hour or something like that. It's pretty good. I guess it would, but it's not a gigabyte a day or anything.
I've had a gigabyte in a very short period of time. Something was sucking it dry.
Yeah.
But this is not doing it, which is good. No Star Wars.
What?
I don't even watch Star Wars. What? Oh, yeah, that thing that pops up on my computer screen.
ZFS replication to an offsite ZFS box. Yeah, something like that. So I'm going to do – so now I'm not a ZF – I'm reading all the ZFS books and stuff, but I'll have to talk about this another time. I don't want to really do a Linux or BSD show, but I do want to talk to you, chat room, about it because you guys are expert. I don't have time to do another show. Alas. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, all that jazz. 888 Ask Leo. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can use Skype and call us that way. Let's talk high tech. On and on we go. We have Robert on the line from... Is it San Diego? Another San Diegan. Hello, Robert.
Hello, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
And to start off, I'm technologically challenged. I'm looking to, transition to a new computer. And I think you've sold me on the Chrome operating system.
Great.
And I'm wondering if there's, I'm looking for secure hardware, well-built hardware, price is no object. Can you make any recommendations for the perfect hardware to run Google Chrome? Or
yeah.
Should I be looking at Windows to run the Chrome browser?
No. So the Chrome browser is one thing, and you can run that on any operating system. And this is actually a good way to see if a Chromebook would be right for you. If you can live in the Chrome browser and do everything you want, that's kind of what it will be like to use Chrome OS. Chrome OS is just the Chrome browser all the time. Now, the Chrome browser is configured in such a way that you can add extensions and apps to it. And for most people, everything you'd want to do, and this, by the way, includes photo editing and video editing and sound editing, you can do inside of Chrome. So that's the first test. Can I do everything? And for most people, what do they use their computer for? Surfing the internet and reading email, which is on the internet. So for most people, that is a very good choice. The advantage of Chrome OS is it doesn't have anything else. So it's a much less complicated system. And Google has designed it to be a very secure system. Now, it does not, you cannot down, you, well, you can, if you're a real geek, you can download something called Chromium OS and put it on hardware. But I would not recommend that. The best way to do this is to buy a laptop or desktop designed for Chrome OS. They call it a Chromebook for a laptop or a Chromebox for a desktop. And there are many manufacturers that make these. In fact, most of the companies that make Windows machines also make Chrome OS machines. Do you want a laptop or a desktop?
I'd like a laptop that I could take on the road, but, you know, at home, when I plug it in, I'd like to be able to port the video display.
And you can do that, yeah. You can do that. Most of them have some sort of output to do this.
Okay.
So my favorite manufacturers of – so you're buying a Chromebook. You know, the best one is made by Google, is ridiculously priced. It starts at $1,000. That's the Chromebook Pixel. That's the one I use, and I adore it. It has one additional feature right now that may make it worth $1,000, which is it's one of the only three Chromebooks that can currently run the Android store. That means you not only have access to anything you can do on a Chrome browser, you can run most of the programs that are designed for Android phones on your Chromebook. That really expands the space of things you can do. So it now is in many ways a full computer with its own app store of more than 2 million applications. However, I would wait till that becomes a regular part of Chrome OS. That'll happen this fall. And then any new Chromebook you buy almost certainly will have that capability. But it does mean you should probably look for a Chromebook that has a touch screen, because many Android apps are kind of designed around the idea that you're touching them as opposed to mousing to them.
So you think the Google Chromebook...
That's the best. If money is no object...
Money's no object.
Oh, well, then there's no question. Get a Chromebook Pixel.
Okay, Chromebook Pixel.
Yeah, and you have two choices. The $999 is fine. It comes with a i3 processor, I think, and a little less memory. If you just came into a big inheritance and you got money to burn, if you're Elon Musk or Bill Gates, I would get the $1,299 higher end Chromebook Pixel. That's a lot faster. It's easy. I mean, there's nobody doubts this is easily the best hardware available right now to run Chrome OS.
Solid-state drives?
It's all solid-state. But remember, one of the big differences about Chrome OS is you're not storing your data so much on the computer. You're storing it in Google's cloud. So your mail, your word processing, your spreadsheets, your presentations, everything is stored in the cloud. And that's one of the chief advantages of a Chromebook. If you lose it or drop it or break it, you get another one, and they start at $200. And you log into your Google account, and all your stuff is there instantly. You don't have to back up. In fact, you don't back up a Chromebook. It's backing up itself. So that's another reason I love these things.
Do you think I should wait till this fall for the hardware upgrades, or do you think?
I'm curious what Google's plans are with the Pixel. It is a year old, and I wouldn't be surprised if Google does have a new Pixel sometime this year. But we've heard no rumors about that at all. The current Chromebook Pixel is as good as you need. It's excellent. I still use it all. In fact, I have it right here. I use it all the time. I wish there were a way you could try, because maybe if you go, it might be Best Buy has them. Somebody must have them, because it's a little. It's design wise a little design challenge. It's like an engineer designed it, which I like. It's very solid, but it's kind of squared off. It's not super light. Good battery life, though. I get through, it's probably 10 hours battery life easily. Great screen, one of the best screens I've ever used. It's a touch screen, which I really like. And the keyboard's excellent, trackpad's excellent. So it's good hardware. It's kind of uninspiring hardware, you know, but maybe that doesn't bother you. They do support SD cards, so you can put external memory into it if you want to copy stuff off or store stuff. But really, you shouldn't think of a Chromebook. You shouldn't worry about the storage in a Chromebook. It is solid state, but it's not the primary storage. And that's the other side of being a Chromebook, is it wants to be online all the time. Now, nowadays, most people have Wi-Fi at home and at work, and in many cases, as they wander around. So that's not a problem, but it's something to keep in mind. You might want to get a Chromebook if you don't have Wi-Fi everywhere, or if you're getting this and you don't have internet at home, then look at a Chromebook that supports LTE. And for $20 to $30 a month, you can can get data off the cell network wherever you are. And that's kind of nice, because you're always online. But it's, again, pricey.
Yeah, no problem. If it's solidly built, I'm interested.
Oh, this thing's a rock. It's a solid cast aluminum body. I've loved this thing. I mean, you know, it's crazy expensive for a Chromebook. Most Chromebooks start around $200 to $300. I like it for if price is an concern. For some people, certainly it is. That's one of the advantages of Chrome OS. In fact, it's one of the reasons schools are jumping on it. It's a great school computer. Acer, A-C-E-R, makes a very nice aluminum one. I think it starts at $250 or $300. Samsung makes excellent Chromebooks. Dell makes a kind of a mid-range, more business aluminum notebook. That's around $500. They make an excellent Chromebook as well. Google has a list. I'll put this on the show notes at techguylabs.com of Chromebooks that will support the Android store. I think anything you buy today probably will. I'm not sure what their criteria are for putting an Android store on a Chromebook. Right now it's only three, but it's pre-release. It's beta. It's early testing of this. And it should be because I've noticed it causes some problems. You have to put your Chromebook in developer mode and all of that. But when it comes out in the fall and is more robust, this will be very interesting. This will mean that the Chromebook can run all your Android apps. That's why you're going to want to get one with lots of RAM. I would say 4 gigabytes of RAM is the minimum. If you can find one, some do, has 8 gigs, that's good. Get a decent processor. Faster processors, better. That's one of the things about the Pixels. It makes it expensive. These are Intel core processors, an i3 or an i5. That makes it more expensive. Storage is not as important. 16 gigabytes is probably fine, although they make 32 and 64 gigabytes as well. If you think you're going to need some local storage, generally you don't. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I think for a lot of people, Chrome OS, that's the right way to go. Asus Flip is excellent if you want a tablet. Yeah, Dr. Mom has one of those. Hey, you know what I don't want to deal with anymore? Bad guys at my door. That's why I got a Ring video doorbell. It actually started with the radio show. Somebody called me and asked about a competitor, and I ordered the competitor's doorbell and had all sorts of problems and didn't like it. I'm not going to say the names. I don't want to diss them. And then I got the Ring because I thought, well, let's try the other one. And I loved it so much, and I'm really pleased to be able to do ads for the Ring video doorbell. I see them all over town now. It's kind of cool. So what is it? Well, it replaces your regular doorbell with and this works with wired or unwired. This is the original Ring because it has a big battery. They have the new Ring Pro that works only with wired doorbells. Most of us, that's what we have, right? Remove the old doorbell. Two wires will be coming out of the door jamb there. You put this plate over them, trim the wires through and connect to the terminals. Already, by the way, this is an improved system. It does come with everything you need. There's a level. There's a drill bit. There's a screwdriver with the security bit, the Pentalobe security bit that they use to mount the Ring, and then a regular Phillips head. Even a USB cable so you can charge it. Yes, this has a battery in it. Lasts about a year, lithium ion. But the other thing, the more important thing, it has an HD camera, wide-angle camera, microphone, and speaker. So when anybody comes to your door, and motion sensor. Even if they don't ring the doorbell, you'll see them. You could talk to them. If they ring the doorbell, you can answer it. It's and from anywhere over the internet using your smartphone or your Macintosh. They have Mac software as well. So you can answer the door, say, I'm not here right now, or more, I would recommend saying, I'm here, but I can't come to the door. What do you want? And even if they don't ring the doorbell, you're going to have crystal clear video of them. Now, we've got a deal, the Ring of Security Bundle Kit or the Pro Bundle Kit. You'll get the Ring Video Doorbell. Plus, they have a camera, solar-powered camera that doesn't require any wiring. They call it the stick-up cam because you just remove the backing, press it, and forget it. And a solar panel to keep it charged. And the chime, which puts another doorbell somewhere else in your house, which is really great. So we're going to get you a deal on that bundle kit, $50 off. They call it the Ring of Security Bundle Kit. Ring.com/tech guy. Never miss a visitor. You're going to love it. Ring.com/tech guy to save $50. So this is, it's not what I would call gorgeous, except it is in a kind of a Bauhaus way. Very, it's form follows function. It's very functional, you know. This is kind of a nice feature. If you unlock, you can pair it to your Android device and you unlock your Android device, then it's unlocked. You don't have to enter a password. Otherwise, you want to enter in your Google password. You can see I'm getting Facebook Messenger. Well, you can't, but there's a Facebook pop-up bubble, you know, like you would get on Android. That's an Android app. That's the Facebook Messenger app that's running on the Chromebook. That's super cool. Here's the Android store, the Google Play store. It's there. So you can run games on it. There are, of course, categories of apps that won't work well on it. I can't play Pokemon Go on it because there's no GPS in this Chromebook. But there's such a huge number of... let's see what is... this one is... oh, why is it opening that? That's not... oh, I know what I want. I want to look at... here we go. So here's the apps I've got installed. Lightroom, which would not normally be... you know, that's an Android app. You can see, in fact, it looks like an Android app because it's doing a phone size. But it's smart enough to go bigger screen. I wonder if I can get a full screen. I can't. They'll have to adapt this to... that's the tablet size. But Snapseed, which is a Google product, photo editing product, will go full screen. So clearly Google is prepared for this transition. So this is better photo editing capability than Google offers in Chrome. This is quite impressive. And this is because it's an Android app. So I think this is really kind of intriguing. You can swipe up and down to change the, I can make it warmer. And it's touch, very touch focused. So that's why you probably want a Chromebook with touch. This is a pretty solid device. I'm not sure which. I think I got the $1,000 one. How do I about Chrome OS? Where do I find out? Let's see if there's an update. Oh yeah, there's an update. And I find out what hardware is in here. Getting help. That's just the firmware. I don't have to find out what the hardware is in here. Maybe advanced settings. The thing is, it's very simple. Like, here's the power wash setting. If I screw this up, power wash it, it's back to factory install, and it's quick and it's easy. Boots in seconds. kind of non-destructive in this. Somebody's asking, is Snapseed non-destructive? It is, because you save a copy of the photo after you mess with it. But can you go back? I think while it's open, you can. It's not Lightroom. But you notice Lightroom runs. I think it's just a matter of time before they put Android Lightroom and make it, you know, because they're going to be aware of the fact that, oh, people are doing this now. So I have a number of, these are Android apps. You can tell the Android apps because they don't have the Chrome, little Chrome bug on them. I've tried a number of Android apps. Some don't work, like Pokemon Go. I think crashes it. But some do. That I was showing that sequence game. Yeah, I think it... oh, let's see. It'd be funny if this worked. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Jane in Los Angeles. Hi, Jane.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm terrific. I'm an author, and I want to get a new laptop.
So writing is what you're going to do on that laptop?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. All right.
And publishers like Word.
Yeah, that always drove me crazy. I would write in some other program and then just... before I send it off to the publisher, I'd move it over to Word and format it. But yeah, you probably want to work in Word. So that means you need a Word compatible computer if you're going to buy it.
Yeah.
You're looking for a laptop. I mean, there are a couple of things I would look at. Do you want to? You don't have to run Windows, by the way. Word is available on the Mac. It's even available on an iPad.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's the touch first Word is very different. And frankly, an iPad is not the ideal writing machine. You can get an external keyboard for it, but if what you want to do is write, You want, I would think, something with a great keyboard, right? Because that's in a
exactly
a spacious screen would be nice.
Yeah.
But you do want it portable. You want to be able to take it to a coffee shop and places.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I would, you know, the best Windows laptops, and I think given that you're going to be using Word, you're probably going to want Windows.
Yeah.
Are made by Lenovo. They're the ThinkPads. Lenovo has a consumer-grade laptop and a pro-grade laptop.
Okay.
I would stay away from the consumer-grade laptops from Lenovo. But the pro-grade, something like the ThinkPad X1, they're lightweight. They have, most people agree, the best keyboard laptop keyboards on the market. They are professional machines, so they have high-quality components, good-looking screens. You can get them with or without touch. Probably touch is not important to you. You want to keep your hands on the keys.
Keyboard, yeah.
Yeah. So I would say look at Lenovo. I'm very happy with, and I've been using for some time, the Dell XPS laptops. And they have 13-inch, but I would say you probably want the 15-inch.
15, yeah. Uh-huh.
I would look at the Dell XPS 15. The nice thing about them, the screens are almost borderless. So they really, they're for the size of the screen, they're compact. There's no bezel around them.
Okay.
Dell makes, I think, excellent laptops. They've got great keyboards and great trackpads. So that would be another place I would look. There are plenty of manufacturers. For a long time, I was carrying the Acer S7, which is a very thin laptop. Currently, it's pretty. It doesn't have touch, but again, you don't care about that.
No.
If you want thin and light with a very nice keyboard, but it's a somewhat smaller screen, HP's Spectre 13T is the thinnest laptop made. It's very light. It's beautiful. It's copper. It's kind of got coppery hinges. And it's got a very usable keyboard. Although with thin, you're going to get less key travel. And that, for some people, is not desirable.
I think I'm looking for key travel.
That's what I think you are, too. I don't type as accurately with the MacBook or the HP because it's so thin. You just can't move those keys very far. So that's, I think the Lenovo is really the one you want.
All right.
If you go try it, you know, the X1 or the X1 Carbon, which is their light one, they're just beautiful laptops.
Cool.
All right.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. And then think about when you get home with the laptop, think about having an external screen.
Okay.
You know, that way you can have a big screen when you're home, but unplug the laptop and take it to, and you can even have a full-size keyboard if you want.
What screen would you suggest?
Oh, Dell makes excellent screens for a very good price.
Okay.
Yeah, Dell 27-inch screen. I just bought the Dell 34, which is a bizarre kind of super wide curved screen, but it gives you a lot of real estate. You know, one thing we know, I don't know if this is true for you, you may not want anything but the writing on the screen. You know, a lot of writers want it completely distraction-free. So, because otherwise you tend to, I have a friend who the first thing he does, he gets home with his new Windows machine, he removes Minesweeper and Solitaire because it's, you know, it's tempting. You don't want those there. You want to write. And a big screen may not be what you want, but productivity for most people goes way up when you have more real estate. You can, for instance, I don't know if you refer to notes as you're writing, but you could have with a widescreen that's capable of 2 8x10 pages side by side, you could have your notes on the left and your writing on the right.
Oh, that's interesting.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah.
Can't really do it on a laptop, but when you get home, if you have a wide screen, you can. Mm. And that is a great way to write.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you refer to notes a lot, there are programs like Scrivener that allow you to kind of keep a database of notes and then have your writing and refer back. You can even have plot lines and character cards and all of the stuff that people, writers often use to keep track of what's going on.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
Thank you.
What kind of books do you write?
Fiction.
Nice.
Novels, yes.
Novels. Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I admire you. I've written a few computer books, and it's the hardest thing I've ever done. I can write, but it's just, it's fun. I can talk a lot more easily. And writing is just hard work. But I guess if it comes out of you and it's something you love, man, I envy you. I think that would be a great thing.
I appreciate that so much. And thanks so much.
My pleasure, Jane. All right.
Okay.
Take care. This is, you know what? She's doing exactly the right thing. And this is when you buy a computer, it's sometimes easy just to say, well, everybody's got a Windows machine or everybody's got a Mac. All my friends have it. And just kind of do the default. But it's a good idea, if you can, to think about what things are important to you. Because every computer has trade-offs. And if keyboard and screen are most important to you, then it's good to know that. If you have to use Microsoft Word, see, these are all important criteria that will push you in one direction or the other. This is an expensive purchase. You're probably going to be living with this for 3 or 4 years. It's worth spending a little time thinking about it. I wouldn't obsess, but I would spend a little time thinking about how you're going to use it, what you're going to use it for, what are the important features of it. If a keyboard, I mean, there's good keyboards and there's bad keyboards. If you don't do a lot of typing, if you just do a lot of surfing, but you want lightweight, battery life is important on the laptop. Screen quality, often overlooked. Size of the screen, resolution of the screen, quality of the screen, brightness of the screen, all of these things are important. Yeah, I got the... it's kind of a showy, curved... 20. It's 21 by 9, so it's like a Cinerama screen. But the idea is, instead of having multiple screens, which I have been doing for productivity, you have one screen, but it's big enough to accommodate all the stuff that you're working on at any given time. See, I'll sit there. I'll have my chat room running. I'll have Twitter running. I'll have a browser running. I'll have messengers running. And unfortunately, the state we're in with messaging apps, you have to have a bunch of them, right? Facebook Messenger and WhatsApp, HipChat for work. I've got that running. I've got Telegram running. So I have four or five little skinny windows containing all the messenger apps because I want to keep those running. Obviously, for me, computing is not a distraction-free environment. It's all about the distractions. But I love the idea of sitting there and having kind of, it's like a nuclear power plant control room set up, right? You got all the buttons, jet airplane, all the buttons, all the screens, it's all there. For a desktop computer, that's to me, that's heaven. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. More questions right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and that magic music means it's time once again to visit the Viewfinder Villa outside of Hanover, Germany, where we'll find Chris Marquardt in his natural habitat. Look over there. Chris has a film camera. He seems to be snapping a photo. Hello, Chris Marquardt.
Hello, Leo Laporte. How are you?
He is mostly a digital photographer, but does do a film from time to time, leads some great workshops. You'll find out more at discoverthetopfloor.com, and joins us each week to help us become better digital photographers. In this case, develop our superpowers.
Become superheroes. Photography superheroes, yes.
So what power are we going to learn today?
Well, last week we talked about panorama shooting. This week we'll talk about the mysterious HDR.
Yeah, everybody talks about it. It stands for high dynamic range, right?
Yeah, and in principle what it means is that, when you look around you, there are very bright things in the room. There are very dark corners in the room. And what the camera can usually do is capture all the brightness range, but then there are scenes out there that the camera cannot capture everything,
right.
Where it's just a bit too far. The camera can't stretch this far out. Our eyes are always better than that. Our eyes are really good. The cameras are kind of somewhere in the middle, and they're just not as good distinguishing the really bright light from the really dark light. So we can do a few things here. We can make this whole dynamic range thing a bit smaller for the camera. That would be the first solution. And how do you do this? Well, either you take away light from where it's very bright, which isn't that easy if the sun's out, or we can fill in some light into the dark areas, and that's what you will typically do when you use a flash. And you sometimes see photographers in bright daylight using a flash. And that's why they do it. They brighten up those shadows so the camera doesn't have as hard a time to work with that. So that is one way to do it.
We don't think of that as HDR because it's...
Not HDR. You're kind of reducing that dynamic range to make it easier for the camera.
Perfect.
The second thing is you just make a choice which part of the picture should be well exposed. I mean, just imagine you're shooting in a room with windows to the outside. The windows are usually very bright and the inside is dark. And the camera can't get all of that. So you could make a choice. You could say, okay, I want the windows well exposed. I want the inside of the room well exposed, or anything in between. But then you will lose part of the image. The windows might blow out or burn out pretty much, be all white, or some parts of the inside might be all black. So if that's not what you want to do, that's where HDR comes in. And what you will do is you'll take several shots of the same scene at different exposures. In photography terms, we call that bracketing. So you would take one shot that is a bit darker, one that's somewhere in the middle, and one that's brighter. And then you will use some magic software to kind of put them together into one picture that has all the different ranges in it. And photographers have done this for quite a while, but it has become much easier over the last years because the software gotten so much better. So let's talk about capturing those pictures. First of all, you will take several pictures in succession. So if things are moving fast, it's not going to work, right? Car race, forget about it. You'll have three pictures with a thing at different places in the picture, and the software can't really get this together.
It's kind of like panorama, right? You don't want people moving in the picture.
Exactly. It's pretty much the same thing. You're shooting several pictures in succession, and if things move between frames, software is getting better. What the software does is what we call de-ghosting. So it takes those ghosts out that normally come in if you have things. And this could be simple things. I mean, we're not just talking people walking through the picture. We're talking moving water or trees in the wind, stuff like that. Nowadays, software is getting a bit better, but it's really best if nothing moves between the frames. You can handle the camera. The software will kind of register those different frames on top of each other. But
typically, like panoramas, we're talking landscapes for HDRs, right?
Well, we're talking landscapes. We're talking insides of buildings.
I guess
if you could
do it indoors, yeah.
If you look at real estate photography, they always have problems with burning out windows.
Yeah.
And that way you can kind of bring them back in. There are lots of situations where you can do this. And then the software comes into play. And you used to have to buy specialized software. Photomatics is one of those pieces of software that does this.
I still use that one. But of course, it's because I bought it.
Well, and it's good. It does a really good job. It's easy to overdo it with this. Okay. Yeah. So there, I'd say there are two different kinds of HDR. The one that is kind of, let's crank all the sliders to the right and see what happens. And that makes these painterly kind of pictures. And it's really a matter of taste. Some people really love that. And then there are this other software, and even Photomatics can do it in a much more toned down way, where you just add a bit of dynamic range to the top and the bottom of the picture. Just add a bit of light in the shadows, add a bit of light in the highlights, and that will make a picture that looks more natural. Let's put it this way. And Lightroom is one of the softwares that does that. It has it built in now. So you select the three, four, five frames that you took, right click on them, and then go to Photo Merge HDR. And then all of a sudden, after that did its thing and added all those pictures into an HDR picture, now the sliders that you used to do exposure with and fill in the shadows and bring down the highlights, they used to be plus minus 5 stops. Now they're plus minus 10 stops. So instead of a total range of 10 stops to move up and down in brightness, you can do this by 20 stops, which is a lot. And you will get really smooth pictures, even smooth shadows, even if you bring up the shadows a lot, because all the information is all of a sudden there. And then you can just tickle the pictures a little bit, get a bit of that, a bit of that thing in the clouds back where the clouds used to burn out.
Subtle
get
HDR,
some of the shadows back.
Subtle HDR, nobody will know you do it.
Exactly.
If you overdo it, I know a lot of people who do this have made a living doing this, and it looks like a painting. And you just say, well, I'm going for the painting as opposed to the reality.
Oh, and that's perfectly fine. That's one type of photography that a lot of people still like.
It's stylistic. It's a matter of style. There's an argument, of course, with a lot of photographers get heat for over-retouching photos, but it's an art. And, you don't complain that Van Gogh's paintings didn't look like the real deal. As long as people understand that you're creating a painting, in effect.
Right. And that's exactly the point. I mean, it's photography, I mean, photography has never been the real thing anyway, because you make a choice when you shoot, you make a choice what you show. Yes. So it's always, yes. there's no real truth in photography anyway. So doing that, nothing wrong with that. I personally just like it more if it's a bit more toned down. And that's what you can now do with a lot of software. Lightroom being one of them, Photomatics too, if you're a bit more careful with the sliders. And then you end up having a higher dynamic range and getting that detail in the shadows that you wanted to get, and get the skies unoverexposed, and everything's fine.
I think this is an effect that's good to have in your tool bag. By the way, you don't have to do multiple exposures to do HDR. Modern cameras, even smartphones, have a lot of range themselves, and so you can use HDR on a single image sometimes, right?
They are getting really good. And some smartphones nowadays even automatically switch to an HDR mode if they detect that there's a lot of light and a lot of dark in the picture and there's a big, big dynamic range. Some smartphones automatically switch to HDR mode. They shoot in very rapid succession multiple pictures and do that whole...
You may not even know they're doing it.
Merging internally. Yeah. Even. Yeah. And then it says HDR really tiny in the corner somewhere.
I leave that on.
And then
on.
You have one of those.
I leave that on my iPhone and many of my Android devices. Just leave the auto HDR on and let them do it if they want to do it. You'll find Chris Marquardt at discoverthetopfloor.com. He'll be back. Are we going to do a review? Maybe in a couple of weeks we'll do a review of our assignment. I'll tell you more about that when we come back. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That worked fine. Every once in a while, I go to your high school picture. Come back.
I'll have to send Burke a current avatar.
So in the shower and say, is that his high school picture? No, that's what you look like. It's a good shot of you. It's a great picture.
That must be 8 years ago.
Is it that long? That's the podcast expo picture, probably.
Time runs. Oh, then it's 9 years ago.
Hey, thank you, Chris. Appreciate it. So next week we'll do four after the show.
We'll do one during the show and four afterwards. Wow. So five in total.
A lot of prep, and you're going to stay
no
up late.
No worries.
I thank you and our audience.
It's already prepared.
Bless you. Thank you. All right. We'll talk to you next week.
See you then.
Bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you want to have some fun with us, we do a photo assignment. Chris Marquardt and I do a photo assignment every month. It's not a competition. It's just for fun. It's just really, frankly, an excuse to take pictures, to get out there and take pictures. So we give you a word or an idea, and we ask you to go on out and take pictures illustrating that word or idea. And I'm trying to remember, as I'm stalling slowly, what the word or idea is this week. What we'll do is we'll ask you to take that picture as up to, you can submit up to one a week. So take hundreds. Pick the best one. Tag it with the idea. Our assignment today is slow, or this month is slow. And once you get an image that illustrates slow, you can submit it to our Tech Guy group on Flickr. Yes, that's a Yahoo property. But I think they'll be around, even with Verizon. It'll be the Verizon Flickr site. Currently free. The group has been around since 2007. In fact, we got 12,000 plus members now and more than 5,000 photos on here. So add to the photo pool. Tag it with the word slow. We're going to be reviewing that, I think, in about 2 weeks. So you got a couple more, about halfway through the assignment, a couple more weeks. We've already got some great slow pictures. Renee Silverman, our moderator, will welcome you into the group if you're not already a member, and accept your submission. And then, I guess, when will that be? August? I don't know. Maybe August 7th? Either that or July 31st. I think August 7th we'll review those. Chris will pick three of the pool and talk about them. TechGuyLabs.com is our website. More information there if you want it. Rick in Indianapolis, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Good to talk to you. I've been listening to you and watching you for, you know, well over 15 years, so it's about high time I called you.
Wow. Wow. Well, you literally are a long-time listener. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, hey, the reason I'll keep this brief, but the reason I'm calling is you've had quite a few callers in the past few weeks that have wanted to talk to you about cutting the cord.
Yes.
And you've mentioned a few other services. Obviously, it's very scattered because there's, like you mentioned, that we're kind of in a transition period with television.
Yeah.
But unless I've missed something, the one one of the services that you haven't mentioned is PlayStation View. And I wondered if you were familiar with that.
You're absolutely right. I haven't. I have a PlayStation 3, but I've never put View on there. So fill me in. Tell me about it. It's VUE.
Right, PlayStation View. It's actually expanded. I don't know much of the history. I know that about a year ago they were doing they had several test markets where they had launched this. San Francisco, I believe, is one of them. And it's basically cable television over the internet.
Wow.
You can use PlayStation View on a PlayStation 3, a PlayStation 4. You can also view it on Roku and an Amazon Fire.
Oh, that's interesting. So I don't have to have a PlayStation to use it.
But the price is right, exactly. But the price is very competitive, and you get quite a few channels, more than Sling, I believe. I'm not all that familiar with Sling, but I know for like $20 you get a handful of channels. But on their lowest tier package, which in some markets it's $29.99, and some it's $39.99. It depends on whether that market delivers or has live local capability. In San Francisco, it does. In my area, Indianapolis, it does not yet, but I understand it's coming.
Yeah, I see in my area, and I don't know if I would qualify, but we're about 50 miles north of San Francisco. They've got all the locals, which would really make a difference in cord cutting, I think. You're right. It looks like a cable competitor.
It really does, and it's I've talked to so many people who have asked the same question, and about cutting the cord. You know, people are talking, what do you do? And I had DirecTV for a while, actually for a long time, but the price just kept going up and up and up for, you know, hundreds of channels I don't watch. But if you look at their menu of channels, they have a pretty decent selection, you know, of the core channels I think most people probably watch. Like even in the lowest tier, you get ESPN, for example. So for $29.99 a month or $39.99 a month, you can get ESPN, for example. You can also get Disney channels. You like if you live in an area, like you said, with locals, you get your locals. You know, there's TBS, there's TNT. So there's you just go to the PlayStation, just search PlayStation View, and you can see all the different.
They have Showtime, which is nice. They don't look like they have HBO, however.
They don't have HBO.
Yeah, they have CNN, which I think for a lot of people is important, and as you mentioned, ESPN. I have to say, it's not a savings particularly. It's roughly the same cost as cable would be.
Well, even for that lowest tier package, it's like $29.99, and you do get they get 60 channels for $29.99, which is pretty decent. It really depends on, you know, what you watch and what you want out of it, but their highest tier package, which I believe is called the Elite package, it's a little pricier. It's $49.99.
Yeah, in my market, it's $55, and that's because we're in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Yeah, but so. If you don't, in the Slim package, for those who don't get the locals, it's $44.95.
Right,
I don't know. It works.
What's the
really
quality
well.
Look like? You like the quality?
That's what I was about to mention. Yeah. Is the quality is actually pretty decent. The only thing especially if you're watching sports, you do notice that you can tell that maybe they reduced the frame rate slightly because it kind of has almost a film look about it. But I've gotten used to it. It looks decent. It's actually not bad at all. And it doesn't take long to buffer a channel. So if you go to the guide, you hit a channel. It starts playing rather quickly. And the other cool thing about it is that, you know, like I use it with the Amazon, the Fire TV, and it doesn't have obviously a DVR, but it has a cloud-based sort of retrieval system. So if you add a station a show as a favorite, you can go back and watch it again, I think, up to 28 days.
That's nice.
Yeah,
and I think at the price point that they're at and the capabilities they have, it's very similar to kind of a lower-end cable solution, mm-hmm. but it's internet only. And I think it might be a good solution for people who don't have access to cable.
You'll have to weigh it in your market. You have to actually go and weigh it in your market as to the price that it's offering, what it gives you, whether it gives you live locals or not, for instance. That's a big question mark. And the lack of HBO for Game of Thrones fans is going to be a problem, but you still can do HBO Now and put that in over the top as well. So, I think what happens is you add Showtime, you add HBO, you get the live locals, and it's going to be fairly close. Maybe you'll save $10. But cord cutting, for me, I don't think is about saving money. What we find is by the time you add in all those features, you end up spending nearly as much. It's really about more choice. So this is one way to have more choice. I appreciate your calling in and reminding me about this. This is PlayStation View, V-U-E. At PlayStation.com if you want to find out some more. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
I appreciate it. Yeah, and I'm glad to – there's a free trial. I'll do the free trial just to take a look at it. But I don't know many people who use it, so I was glad somebody called in and told us about it. News at the top of the hour coming up next. When we return, we're going to talk to Laurie. Yes, you're next in San Diego. She wants to get video recordings back from her phone after they've been deleted. Oh, dear. Well, let's see if we can help her. When we come back, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's my phone number if you want to call, 888-827-5536. The website, it's free, techguylabs.com. The Tech Guy Podcast brought to you today by Rocket Mortgage, a completely online way to buy a new house, to get a mortgage, or to refinance your existing home. Rocket Mortgage comes from Quicken Loans, so you know it's a great product. Quicken Loans, these guys are smart. They said, you know, there's a whole generation of people who don't want to gather piles of paper together, fax it to the loan officer or bring it into the loan office, constant, you know, back and forth. Believe me, I've done this many times. Just 3 years ago, Lisa and I bought our house. It went on for weeks. Okay, we need another piece of paper, another piece of paper. Rocket Mortgage. I wish they'd had it then. The next time we refi or we buy a new house, we're going with Rocket Mortgage. It's all online. A click of the button, you can get your pay stubs, everything you need to get them, your tax returns. No paper. You don't even have to do it on your desktop. You could do it on a tablet, on your phone. It's that easy. Check it out. QuickenLoans.com/TechGuy. Rocket Mortgage has taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. And because it's all computerized, you can get approved in minutes. And get a custom solution that's just right for you. They can highly customize it. They could do it fast. They could tailor it to your unique financial situation. It's, frankly, bringing the mortgage loan process into the 21st century. And you're 21st century people. You deserve this. QuickenLoans.com/TechGuy. It's Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. QuickenLoans.com/TechGuy. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS. ConsumerAccess.org. Number 3030. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans at quickenloans.com/TechGuy. And we thank them so much for their support, making the Tech Guy possible. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, GPSs. Pokemon Go, virtual reality, augmented reality, real reality, 888-ASK-LEO. That's my phone number, 888-8. That's toll-free, by the way, 888. It's like an 800 number, 888-827-5536. And that's in the U.S. and Canada toll-free. But outside that area, because it's a toll-free number, you can Skype into it using Skype Out. We get calls from all over the world, Russia, Germany, Sweden, Brazil, all over the world, and that it shouldn't cost you anything if you use Skype or some other VoIP solution. 8888-ASK-LEO. The website, techguylabs.com, and that costs nothing. There's no sign-up, but we put everything there. So any link I mention. Now, I think James DeRuvo is a big comic book guy, and he and his son go to Comic-Con. I think the show notes are a little delayed this weekend. He's got some other things he's doing, but he'll get to those this evening after Comic-Con. Bless his heart. He's probably exhausted. He gets home and, you know, he's got to take off the costume, the superhero mask, and back to work. But he will get those notes up as quickly as he can. You also, so you get every show hour by hour, question by question. Your comments, really welcome on any segment. We put all the links up there, everything I refer to, so you don't have to write anything down as you're listening. And we also, after the fact, we'll put audio and video. So if you want to, if you miss a show and you want to listen to it again, there's a podcast and you can get that at techguylabs.com. All right, now let's move on. Lori is hanging on in San Diego, home of Comic-Con.
Yes.
Do you ever go to Comic-Con or you stay well away?
Well away.
Me too. What can I do for you, Lori?
Oh, I did a very bad thing. I lost some very important audio files. They're audio, not video.
Okay.
I just spoke to the screener.
Yeah.
My phone was saying out of internal storage, so I got rid of some apps and deleted all the cache files. All my apps. And I did not know that it would take these voice recordings were in a cache.
Were they voicemails or recordings you made with a recorder?
Yeah, it's like an audio recorder on my phone.
All right, so once it's erased from the phone, it's not recoverable on the phone, but did you ever connect it to the computer? And
no.
Never.
Nope. I was in the process of trying to get them forwarded over to, you know, my email, and they just wouldn't go. And I think it was because it was too much storage space, so that's why I didn't like trying to delete.
So iPhones are, it was an iPhone, right?
No,
the
LG G2.
Oh, it's an Android device. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, iPhones have this kind of nice automatic backup capability. You can do it wirelessly if you turn on iCloud, or if you connect it via a USB cable to your computer, iTunes will back it up. And had that happened, mm-hmm. you would be able to get into that and get the data out of it.
Yeah,
Android phones, the way they back up is not quite as complete. There's a checkbox in the settings. It's the backup and reset setting or backup. Sometimes it depends on the phone. It has different names. And it will back up, but it's mostly like information, login, network information. It won't back up data files. For that, you either have to put another application on there or you have to connect it to a computer and manually copy the files off. You can... There's one possible thing. How long has it been since you deleted those?
Last night.
Okay. Don't do too much, okay, mm-hmm. with the phone, because everything you do at this point has the potential to erase the stuff on the phone. But you can, on most Android devices, if you get a USB cable, connect your phone to your computer. Do you have a Mac or a PC?
A PC.
Connect it to the computer. The phone will see that it's connected to a computer. Most of the time, it'll pop up a little dialogue that says, oh, do you want to be a camera? That's photo transfer protocol, or PTP. Mm-hmm. Or would you like...
I did that last night, but it didn't give me any prompt.
Didn't tell you? Well, pull down the notifications, see if there's anything there. Sometimes it might not pop it up.
Oh, okay.
Pull down the notifications. Because if you could put it in... There's two possibilities, media transfer protocol, MTP, or sometimes you can see it just like a disk. It'll be USB mass storage. If you can get to the phone that way, and you need to, by the way, get it to it as a mass storage device, then it looks to your PC like any other drive. You'll see folders, you'll see files. Now, you erased those, so... I would look around and see if you can see them, but maybe there's a copy there that you didn't get erased. But if there isn't, then you could run recovery software on it. See, when files are erased on hard drives or on storage and phones, it's the same. Generally speaking, the data itself is not deleted.
Yeah.
It's just the area where it's stored is released for reuse. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you did it last night, so chances are nothing's overwritten it, or maybe only a few things are overwritten.
Uh-huh.
With any luck, and this is kind of, there's a lot of ifs here, you can connect it to a computer, see it as a drive. What you want is the drive to mount on your computer. You'll see a little icon that's the phone drive. Then you could run a program like Recuva, R-E-C-U-V-A, an unerase program. I'm going to put a link in the show notes to a website called Instructables. And thank you for the link from the chat room. that describes this process.
Okay.
There's a program they recommend called Dr. Phone with an F at easyphonerecovery.com that is designed to unerase files. I'll put a link in there. Or you could go to easyphonerecovery.com. I have not tried this. You may see, if you go to the link, Instructables, you'll see a number of related articles that are similar. How to recover deleted or lost photos from Android. How to recover files from Android. How to recover deleted photos from Android. You know, a photo or sound, it doesn't matter. It's okay. A file.
Okay.
So anything you see about recovering deleted things, you may have to try a few things. The trick on this is... don't use the phone. Use the phone as little as possible, because any file, anything you put on that phone, could potentially overwrite that erased file. Right, it's now been released, so that's one issue, right? And then you're just gonna have to cross your fingers and hope that you find the key.
Yeah, I'm
so sorry.
Very important, and I don't know. I'm not very technical savvy.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. You know, if there is in town, and I'm sure there are plenty of these in San Diego, a phone repair store where they replace cracked screens and stuff.
Yeah.
Tends to be run by geeks. And in my experience, very nice geeks who know more than just fixing the hardware. You might go to one of those and say, and maybe you'll have to go to a couple and say, hey, guys, I've lost some files. And trust your instinct. If the guy's kind of, I can do that. Yeah, sure. Maybe find somebody who's got more confidence.
Uh-huh.
But those guys tend to be, my experience has been pretty smart in terms of how these phones work. They can also help you.
Okay, if you could reach out to anybody in San Diego, if they know of anybody.
Yeah, well, if anybody's listening, you can mention it in our chat room or put a link. You know, we'll put this, of course, in our website, techguylabs.com. Mention that. You could just call around and say, hey, tell them the story. I deleted some files on my Android phone. Do you have any expertise in undeleting files? It should not be expensive. It's not a lot of time and trouble. And they don't have to disassemble the phone. It's all software. So $50, $100, no more than that. Don't pay them more than that. Trying to find somebody who knows what they're doing. But those guys, my experience has been they're usually pretty smart. Leo Laporte, I'm sorry, the tech guy.
I was trying to send you a message.
I see a picture of you on my screen.
Of me?
Yes. Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
If she had that turned on, they'd be in that drive.
They're audio files.
I thought she said video.
I know, but she said it's audio.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Well, Google Photos is always a good thing to have.
Always good. Well,
I have it on my iPhone.
You know, I don't want to... I'm not going to... I feel for her, but of course, this is, again, another example of why backup is everything. You know, if you don't have it backed up, you don't... It's not protected. So photos is one way to back up photos and videos. Audio is a little more complicated. You really need to actually back it up. Back it up.
Whoa.
What's that sound?
I'm just whistling at you. No, it's Periscope.
Oh, Periscope. Yeah.
Periscope notification.
I try to get now different notifications for every occasion. So that when I hear a sound, I know what's going on.
I was able to personalize that a lot better on my Android.
Oh, you have an iPhone now?
Right. Yes.
No.
Because you pushed me to it.
I did it?
It was your
fault. Pushed you to an iPhone?
Yeah. Because at the time, that's what you were all about. And then, you know, of course, a month later, you changed.
Oh, yeah. You should never listen to me because it's a different phone every week. Yeah.
I really like one of each. I think that would satisfy.
See, that's kind of my problem is I have one of each, and I don't mean one Android, one iPhone. I mean every Android.
Well,
one
no,
iPhone.
I don't want one of every model, but I want an Android and I want a iPhone.
That's kind of pathetic, but that's my solution to the Pokemon Go problem. Is not battery packs. Just have a couple. You bring four or five phones with you, and you can always. That's the nice thing, by the way, because it's tied to your Google account. You can use multiple phones to play.
You can't. But my beef with the iPhone that I've realized recently is when I had an Android, you can be playing you could be on the phone and play Pokemon Go because you could be connected to the internet while you're on the phone. But for some reason, it seems like you can't do that with the iPhone.
No, really what you need to do is have a Pokemon Go dedicated phone.
No, I need to not play it anymore because, yeah. No, I'd like to be on the phone and be able to look things up. And why can't you do that on the iPhone? Do you have any,
Well, are you Verizon?
I'm Verizon.
Yeah.
But I was able to, with Android on Verizon, I was able to have a phone call going and look at the internet.
Yeah, that's how they're doing it. It's because your Android, was using, LTE for phone. But the iPhone isn't it. So it's, it can't do both. It's a historic problem with Verizon. And some phones have fixed it because Verizon has fixed it if the phone supports it. But the phone has to support it. It's a complicated thing.
It's complicated.
Next version will certainly do that. I'm surprised currently that the current one does
not. Next version of iPhone?
Yeah. It's an iPhone problem. It's an iPhone plus Verizon problem.
I'll be paying this thing off for the next year.
I know, you're stuck. You're not going to want, in fact, I don't think Lisa's going to want the next.
Seven. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's not going to have a headphone jack.
I think
that
that's stupid.
Shocking. If they do that,
I don't need to be forced to use Bluetooth.
Right.
Don't tell me what to
do. Or special lightning cable headphones. Right. Terrible idea. But I think that's, I think that actually is where they're going. This is kind of fun. I like this. Extra Pokemon
Go
battery.
I've got two of them in my purse.
Batteries?
Not batteries. The ones that you connect via USB, the extra batteries.
Yeah, cool. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time for the Thunder Down Under. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you have a question. 888-827-5536. G. Scott, my buddy from Minnesota. Hi, G. Scott.
Hey, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. So, what's up?
There we go.
There we go. Yeah, well, you sounded like you were in a tunnel. You were in a tube.
Yeah, I had the headphones in and then turned the speaker back on. So, anyway, I've been, paying attention the last couple of days and weeks. Productivity and real estate. I listen to that, and that's working well for me.
Good.
Got three laptops, and so I got my multiple screens.
So that's one way to do it.
Two of those are Windows 10. I got my Surface Book and then a Vio.
Yeah.
And I got an older Vio with Windows 7, and I keep hanging at 35% on my Windows 10 upgrade.
Oh.
Both over the air and I downloaded the ISO and I'm hung there. So now yesterday you were talking to a guy about Linux on an old machine.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering. So
you're a good geek. I mean, I know that you have some technical chops. So this is a good choice for somebody like you. And, by the way, it's a gateway drug because as soon as you put Linux on that old machine, you start playing with it. You go, hey, this is pretty nice. I could get used to this. You start putting it on all your machines.
Yeah. And, I'm kind of an Office user. I run a lot of spreadsheets, a lot of Word, but like the older box, oftentimes I'm looking at Google Earth on there because I'm mapping my sites.
Do you do it with the Google Earth app or you do it via the web?
On the web, Google Earth.
Yeah, because you have. I use Chrome, the Google browser on Linux, and it works great.
Okay.
You can use Chrome, but I use the open source version of Chrome called Chromium, which is actually what they use. What Google does the development in Chromium, and then releases it as Chrome. So I'm very happy with Chromium. It has all the features of Chrome. It's a great choice, and that's nowadays with these open source operating systems, you're not giving up as much as you used to. And in my opinion, with the way Microsoft is treating Windows users, you're gaining a lot called freedom from annoyance. So, if you want that Windows 7 laptop ever to be able to run Windows 10, you got 5 more days to get it working because on the 29th, no more free upgrades. So,
and I don't know what's up with it. It hangs at 35%. It's a Vista upgraded to Windows 7.
But you have a Windows 7 license for it, right?
Yes.
You have the key? What I would do at this point, download the Windows 10 ISO. Microsoft has a disk builder. Get it from Microsoft.com. Make an ISO of Windows 10, the installer. It's just like an install disk. You put on a USB key or a DVD if you want. And then wipe the drive, because Vista to 7 is probably really crufty. So get a fresh, clean drive. Keep that key. You need the Windows 7 key, because when you install Windows 10, it says, I don't see anything on here. Do you have a Windows 7 key? You give it that. Let it complete. Authenticate. Now, if you want, you can go back to 7.
But
you now have the right at any time to go to Windows 10. If you want to keep that machine going, and this is, I'm saying this not just to you, but to everybody listening, on the 29th, this free upgrade goes away. So even if you don't want to run Windows 10, but you think someday you might want to, and here's why. This is the last version of Windows. This is it. Once you get that machine to Windows 10, you'll never have to worry, because there won't be a Windows 11. You just keep it updating, and Microsoft's going to keep you up to date. There really won't be an end of life. That machine will die before you run out of Windows. So this is the time to do that. Now, having said that, sounds like you're interested in doing Linux. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
If it's a Vista machine, you could try. The first thing I always do is go to Ubuntu. It isn't actually my favorite version of Linux, but it's a very good one for your first version, because it's as close to Windows as you can get. It has all the drivers for the hardware. An older machine shouldn't have any problem. You should be able to install it. Everything will just work. The touchpad, the camera, the close to sleep, suspend, all of that should work. Of course, Wi-Fi and Ethernet, all of that should work. So it'll have a very simple experience for you, and it will feel very much like Windows. You won't be running Microsoft Office. If you want to do Office stuff, Excel spreadsheets, you probably want to – you could, with some effort, use Wine to run Microsoft Office. But my recommendation is to try the Office that comes with Ubuntu. It's called Libre, L-I-B-R-E Office. Libre is a word used often in open source. They'd like to say free, but that has confusion, because free sounds like no cost. They don't mean free as in no cost. They mean free as in liberated, as in liberty, and that's why they often use Libre. So LibreOffice is actually free as in no cost, but more importantly, liberated. You have access to the source. You can modify it. No company is messing with you, changing file formats to get you to upgrade, pressuring you to do things, revealing your information to advertisers or law enforcement. It's Libre. It's free. Try that. See if you're comfortable with it. If it doesn't run well, they have versions of Ubuntu that are designed for older machines, in particular Xubuntu, which is lighter weight, takes less RAM. How much RAM's on that laptop?
I'm at least 4, maybe 8 gigs.
Oh, you're fine.
I got a 256 solid-state drive in there.
Oh, you've kept it up to date. Yeah, it's going to run Ubuntu just fine. If you have less RAM, sometimes Xubuntu is a better idea, because it doesn't take up as much memory.
No, it's a pretty competent machine, and it will. I can run the Office stuff on the Surface Book.
You
and
still
the,
have your Windows machine.
No problem.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a great great opportunity to try Linux, if you ask me. Now, personally, I like Debian a little bit better. Ubuntu is still a company with some corporate interests. For instance, they're going to install an Amazon icon on there. And for a while, they routed searches through Amazon. So I'm not crazy about Ubuntu in terms of freedom. Debian is community-driven all the way. It is a community project, and it is what Ubuntu's based on. So you're using, really, it's one of the oldest Linuxes, and it's beautiful, debian.org. And you can download and install Debian with the same desktop. Try Cinnamon. It's very much like Windows. And I think you'd be just as happy. I think you'd have just as few problems and maybe even more security than you'd have on Ubuntu, with less commercial interests involved. So if you're feeling, and you're smart, you can do this. If you're feeling ambitious, try Debian. If not, Ubuntu is a very straightforward. It's really as close as you can come to installing a commercial operating system on that laptop.
And I'm hesitant on the command line stuff. Do I have to learn a whole new thing, or is it?
Well, it's not DOS.
Right. Right.
It's not PowerShell. It's Bash. I think once you get used to it, you will find it very powerful and capable. I don't use bash, which is the default command line on Linux. I use something called fish, which I love. You might want to, if you're going to start from scratch, start with fish. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Stand by. Yeah, I don't. I think, you know, you're a smart guy. I think you'll like it. I think you'll. And you don't need the command line in any respect. You know that, right? Oh, is he gone? Oh, I pushed the wrong button. You still there, George G. Scott? Oh, shoot. Well, I'm sure he's listening. Yes, I know it's the G. Scott in the chat room. You don't need the command line in any respect. It's nice if once you learn it, there's so much you can do with it. Leo's downplayed the complications and issues upgrading Windows 10 and either running both OSs or reverting back to previous OS. Hasn't delved into licensing issues. There are no licensing issues. So if you get the upgrade, if you get the upgrade offer, and if you're running Windows 7 or Windows 8.1 currently, you'll probably get it. Soon you're going to get a big blue takeover screen that says, what are you doing? You only have 4 days left. And you say yes, and you accept it. Let it run. I would back up first. So you, if anything goes wrong, and sometimes it does, I've had it go wrong, you can restore. If you can make an image of your existing disk and then do the Windows 10 upgrade, I would do that. Do the Windows 10 upgrade. As soon as it activates, if you have an activated version of Windows 7 or 8.1, almost instantly Windows 10 will be activated. And you can, you know, look at your computer and look at the properties on my computer or type WinVir at the command line and see if it's activated. Once it's activated, there are no licensing issues. It's done. Unless you're business. Sorry, G. Scott. Yeah. I know sometimes with people I particularly enjoy, I will talk to you in the break. But you know what? I have to do an ad anyway. So I think Microsoft is so anxious to get everybody on Windows 10 because this is it. They don't want to deal with this anymore. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. And on we go to, looks like Richard in California. Hey, Richard, Leo Laporte.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I like the tweet of your car.
I just got a Tesla Model X. You're lucky I'm here doing the show and not driving it around.
I think the show has been taped and you're somewhere else.
I feel like I want to drive to San Diego next week and in my Tesla. It's kind of like flying a little bit. I'm big on electric cars now. It's really sold me. It's fabulous. Anyway,
question.
Enough of that.
Thanks to Scott, I bought a Vizio P55.
He loves those Vizio performance TVs. Really great.
Well, I have one problem. I have a lot of things to plug into the HDMI ports, and I've lost and I've used them all up. Do you believe in the HDMI splitters?
Yeah, I mean, as you know, splitting a signal can be problematic. So you want what's called an active splitter. You want one that is you're going to plug in. Right. You don't want one that's just going to take one signal and split it and split it and split it because that's going to cause problems. Now, ultimately, the right way to do this is with an AV receiver. This is going to be by far the better solution. But if you don't want to get an AV receiver, yeah, Geffen, G-E-F-E-N, and others, I'd go to monoprice.com and look at their splitters and look for an active splitter. Most of the time, I didn't have great experience with this. In theory, they will auto-switch to whatever's sending a signal down. So they have multiple in, one out. The one out goes to your TV. And if you switch to your Blu-ray player and start playing a movie, the splitter, the switch, it's really a switcher, not a splitter. The switcher is supposed to say, oh, that's active, and switch to it. My experience was, no, I had to get up and physically tell it, use this. They work, and they don't degrade the signal if you get an active switcher as opposed to a splitter.
Okay, I'll look for that. Thank you. I do have a splitter. I've had it for years, but I've been looking at it when I was waiting to talk with you, and all it says on it is 1x2 HDMI splitter, high-definition multimedia interface.
Does it plug in, or is it just...
It plugs in.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff in the back.
So that's the one. That's active. As long as it's powered, that means it's not just splitting the signal, you know, slicing it and weakening it by doing so, but it's amplifying it. And that's what you want.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to give this a try. But I really like the television set. Tell Scott.
I will. Good choice. I think that's a nice TV. And it shows that that Vizio is, you know, really coming on strong. For a while, they were kind of a second-tier player that made very good TVs at a very low price. You'd see them at the big box stores. But now they say, no, you know what? We're as good as the other guys. By the way, they're an American company, City of Industry. So, you know, I'm looking at Monoprice, and I'm seeing a variety of switchers. And they call them switch and splitter. And that's, you know, you want one that's powered. They're a little more expensive. Here's one that's 1x2 for $68. You can get many more. But as I said, ultimately, the best way to do this, and the way I do it, is get an AV receiver. It acts as that because it has multiple. The one I have has 7 HDMI ins and 2 out. And so you can plug in. And nowadays, we got the Roku, we got the Blu-ray, we got the PlayStation or the Xbox. We got a variety of things we're plugging into our TVs. It's nice to have one device. It gives you better audio because it has surround sound, so you can attach speakers to it. It has bigger amplifier. And it gives you the remote so that you can sit there. And sometimes they even do it automatically pretty well. So you can sit there. For instance, if I press the button on my Apple TV, the Apple TV is so aggressive, it will switch the AV receiver. It'll do everything it needs, and it'll be on the screen. It'll take over. I don't have to get up or mess with the AV receiver. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the key, though. And same thing with your cable. You know, I have cable splitters. And if it's just, you know, a passive device, one in, two out, it's taking the power of one cable and splitting it into two. And that often can degrade the signal. So something active is going to be a better choice. And like I said, there are a lot of good choices. It's not too expensive when it comes to HDMI. It's a digital device. Scott's in Fountain Valley, California, our next caller. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Leo.
How are you?
Thanks for taking the call.
Good. Well, thank you.
You're well. Hey, I'm using iTunes on my iMac. I have El Capitan, and I'm using Samsung 7, and I'm trying to get music from my iTunes on the iMac onto my Samsung. That's one of many problems I'm having.
It's an issue only if it's copy-protected music. And as you know, iTunes has stopped selling that. But if you bought music earlier on iTunes, it's in a format that cannot be played on the Samsung. Only can be played by iTunes and an iPhone. Now, you can fix that easily. Is it copy-protected? Do you know if it has DRM in it?
Well, I've got a whole bunch of different files. I mean,
if you took a CD and you recorded it to the computer, it's not protected. It would only be protected
if, that way.
Yeah. It's only protected if you bought it at the iTunes store more than 3 or 4 years ago. All of the early stuff was protected. Easy enough to remove it. Apple has something called iTunes Match. It will replace the copy-protected music with unprotected music if you ask it to. And then you're golden. But if you don't have any, you'll know, by the way, when you try to copy it over, you'll know because it won't copy over and you won't be able to, it'll say, I'm sorry, I can't play this file because it's copy protected. For a long time, I've used DoubleTwist. They sometimes call DoubleTwist iTunes for Android. It is a program you can put on your Android device. You can even do it over Wi-Fi, or you can hook it up to your computer and have DoubleTwist running on your computer. It will sync just like iTunes does. It'll copy it over. And they may even, I wouldn't be surprised if DoubleTwist strips out DRM. And the reason I say that is it was created by a kid, he's an adult now, whose nickname is DVD John because he figured out how to strip out copy protection out of DVDs back when he was a high school kid. So he has a history of getting rid of copy protection. I wouldn't be surprised if DoubleTwist did that as well. DoubleTwist is just one. There are many. Are you Windows or Mac?
I'm using a Mac, and that's the problem. Taking music from, or even photos from my photos or my iTunes on the iMac, getting it onto my Samsung. So I have to put
it's not ideal
onto my onto my phone, or would you recommend it on the computer?
Well, if you like to sync, I would put it on both, and it's free, so do.
Oh.
There are a number of ways to do this. There, of course, remember that when you connect your phone to your Macintosh, a program called the Android File Transfer Program runs. If you don't have it, you'll have to download it. I don't think Samsung has their own version of this. But when it runs, suddenly your phone looks like a hard drive. And that means you can drag your music onto your phone. Just drag your music from your iTunes folder onto your phone folder.
So if I download the Android File Transfer or find it on my computer, then just drag it straight from my Mac.
You're not syncing. Now you're just copying. But if all you want to do is get your Mac music onto your Android phone, that's all you need. If you want to sync, in other words, kind of update it with new music all the time, then DoubleTwist. And there are other ones as well. There's a lot of programs that will do this. I use DoubleTwist. I like it a lot. There's iSyncer and SyncTunes X, things like that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's never going to be as easy doing it on a, Apple to Android, because Apple wants you to buy an iPhone, right? So they make it as easy as pie with an iPhone. But I use Android phones. I never use, and I have all my music on there. So that's the way to do it, I think. No, somebody put the Tesla weight on there. It's heavy because it's got those batteries. I don't know. I'm sure I could just, let me ask. Okay, Google. How much does a Tesla Model X weigh? 5,271 to 5,381 pounds. A little over 2 tons. 2.5 tons. It's a heavy carb. But so are all the Teslas, because they have a whole substrate of batteries in the bottom part. The way they spin it is it makes the car... really low center of gravity, really stable. I don't worry too much because I'm not using gas. So it's like I used to, like, in the Audi, it was getting 14 miles to the gallon. If I stepped on the gas, it would appreciably, when I hit the pedal, it would appreciably use more gas. I could see that because I had the automatic. It's like, whoa, now it's down to 3 miles a gallon. But you kind of have to, when I use a Tesla, I have to remind myself, no, you can, it doesn't, it's maybe uses more electricity, but I got a solar panels and it's generating it. So feel free. So I have to admit every once in a while, and Lisa says, you cannot do that without warning me. I'll just, I got a clear line of sight, nice smooth road up ahead of me, no traffic. It's like a rocket launch. It's so awesome. I shouldn't do that too much. I have not watched the new Mr. Robot yet. I know I must. It has, not only does it have a lot of torque, it has full torque at zero. So in a gas engine, there's always a little hesitation as it builds up speed and torque. Electric motors have a continuous torque. So it's got 100% torque from the instant you hit the pedal. So, yes, it has a lot of torque. I can't remember what the... I think it's 0 to 60 in 3.8 seconds. Not that I ever need that. Ludicrous is 3.2 seconds. I didn't get ludicrous because I didn't really feel like I needed that. But it's faster than a lot of, so-called very fast cars. Let's see what the... I don't remember what the speed is. Here's a drag race. These are Model S's. It's pretty amazing. Oh, you can't see that. I'm sorry. You just heard it. Kind of pins your head to the back of the seat. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I can't believe it. How'd this happen? Winding down the show, last segment. You know, if you like tech talk, we do it all week long. I don't stop. You can imagine. I'm not going to stop talking about this. So what I ended up doing is creating a podcast network. We're going to do shows every day and continue to talk. So the podcasts go on our TWIT network. It stands for This Week in Tech. And you can find them all at twit.tv on the web or on a, you know, iTunes, whatever you use for a podcast. You know, it's weird, and this hurts my feelings, but you can't, the Tesla has a browser in it, which you shouldn't be using while you're driving. There's a big 17-inch screen in it, but and it has a browser, and you can pull up YouTube, you can pull up all different sites. You can't pull up my site. It says, no, there's no such thing as twit.tv. It's like, I feel personally like Elon doesn't like me or
they
something.
They don't want you to watch live TV.
No, that's what I
driving.
Thought. But so I pulled up twitch.tv. That works. YouTube.com. That works. Just twit.tv doesn't work. Do you think that, like...
You got on Elon's bad side.
I think Elon, I must say, hey, Elon, let me call downstairs. Hey, whatever you do, don't let twit.tv work. Okay. Isn't that weird? I don't understand it. Anyway, back to the phones we go. Your browser will work, twit.tv. Tony on the line from Buffalo, New York. Hey, Tony, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Uncle Leo, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I am well.
What can I do for you?
I had a couple of comments and a question.
Yes, sir.
Well, first of all, I wanted to try to call you today via Skype from my Mac, and it wouldn't let me log in. And I'm calling you now from my iPod Touch.
Now, that's interesting because we, you know, Chris Marquardt, who joins us to do photo talk, did about an hour ago, his Mac wasn't working either. He got it working by erasing the old Skype, downloading a new version, and reinstalling.
You know, I recall the email I got about a month ago from Skype saying that they weren't going to support desktop versions or something like that anymore?
No, they do, but they're doing some, look, it's Microsoft bought them a few years ago and left them alone, didn't change anything for the longest time. There seems like Microsoft's starting to mess around with it. For instance, they have turned off the peer-to-peer aspects of it. They're running everything locally. They've now support Skype on desktops that aren't Windows and Mac using Google technology called WebRTC. Let me load Skype on my Macintosh and see if, I mean, maybe it's not working anymore. I have it on this Mac here, but it's not their intention to kill Skype. In fact, I can tell you right now, this is for Microsoft. Skype is their messenger. It's their program moving forward, right? They want everybody, Mac or not, including Linux. They're actually putting out new versions for Linux. That shows you this is their messenger program. They really care about that. So it seems odd to me. It may just be a localized issue. I guess I don't have Skype on it. Well, wait a minute. That's weird. I was sure I had Skype on here. Maybe they deleted it. I will. I'll tell you what. I'll download it and try it. As far as I know... Why isn't Skype for Mac OS starting? Well, apparently somebody in the chat room has sent me a link to support, Skype support, and they're saying, they're not saying there's an issue. They're saying make sure your version of Mac OS 10 is up to date. You're using the latest version of QuickTime, blah, blah, blah. This is just a support issue. I would delete it and re-download it. The nice thing about Skype is you just log into your account and all of your... contacts and everything will still be there.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I'll try that.
I think that that's a localized issue. I haven't heard anything about Microsoft saying, oh, we don't want to do Skype for Mac anymore. No. It's quite the opposite. Notice, by the way, Microsoft supports iPad and iPhone better than their own phone. They put out Office for the iPad and the iPhone, and they still haven't put it out for, maybe they have by now, for Windows Phone, but long before they did it for Windows Phone. They are no longer... the Microsoft that used to hate everything else and say, it's got to be on Windows or nothing. They now say, we want it. In fact, they've said this. Satya Nadella, their new CEO, says, we want to be wherever our customers are. Of course, he says, of course, we want the best experience to be on Windows, but we will make our software work everywhere because that's our customers are everywhere. So I would be shocked if they did anything to make Skype not work on the Mac. I'm sure they intend for it to work on the Mac. Reinstall, see if it works better. Dave, Ridgecrest, California. Hi, Dave. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Well, hello, Leo. Hi.
Hello.
Hey, I'm an 85-year-old retired electronic engineer and a lifetime member of the IEEE. So,
I salute you, sir.
Teach computers when I was in school.
Yeah, but well, you know what? You are the ancestors, right? You're the guys that made this possible. So thank you.
Yeah, sort of.
Yeah.
Anyway, I've got three computers. One of them's not running at all. Right, my main computer is a Mac, and I'm running Time Machine to a MyBook external drive. Digital?
MyBook is that external drive. All right. Yep.
Yeah. And all I had to do before was just shut the computer down, and then the next morning it would come up all right. Recently, I was getting a voice warning that my disk was not ejected properly. And I said, well, there's no disk there, because I thought it was talking about the DVD. And then I found out that, no, there's something going on.
Well, in theory on Macs, and this is different from Windows, when you remove a USB drive, you're supposed to eject it first. But you're saying you didn't remove it.
No.
But it said it was removed. So
no.
We know that something, maybe the cable, could be simple, could be the cable's going wrong.
Well,
it could be more complicated. It could be the hard drive is dying, or it could be the electronics, because inside that MyBook box, there's a circuit board. Could be that is dying, too. So, yes, you're correct. Something's going wrong with your hard drive. Are you able to get it working if you replug it?
Well, yeah. What I do now, and this morning it came up fine.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why, but when it says it can't see it, I unplug the cable, the data cable, plug it back in, and then lean on the reset button, and it seems to come back up.
So there's several possibilities. Could be the Mac's USB port is funky. Have you tried a different port?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't fix it?
No.
Okay. So good. That's best, because that's the worst possible scenario is your Mac's got a problem. Could be the cable. I'd try a different USB cable. If it doesn't fix that, then there's something wrong with the hard drive. They're cheap enough now that what I would do, you don't want one that's kind of unreliable. What you want to do is replace it. And thank your lucky stars, you got backup. Hey, I'm out of time. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security and Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.